gentlemen, welcome to the March 1st, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Remind you that we have emergency exits at the back of the room to my right and in the front of the room to my left. If there should be a fire, please don't use the elevator. I wonder if folks would please stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Dennis?
I am here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein has asked to be excused. Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present?
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will have a brief executive session regarding real property negotiations. That'll be after the meeting, after the regular business of the meeting this afternoon. We're going to go to privilege of the floor for, before we start with the members of the public, I'm going to recognize our legislator, Dooley Kiefer, who has a presentation to make. Dooley.
Can you hear me?
No. Better.
All right.
Better.
Super Tuesday, a Super Distinguished Youth Award. And I'd like to call Jonathan Gomez Selman up here. And as many members of his family or friends who'd like to come up, please do so also. This award is sponsored by Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden and Purity Ice Cream, as well as the Cayuga Radio Group. The Cayuga Radio Group has already publicized this award. It was to be given at the last legislative meeting, but due to abominable weather conditions, it wasn't safe for the family or the student to make it here, although we all made it, and so it's been delayed till today, the actual official award. The award letter that I read in our file was one of the most amazing ones I've ever come across, and I'm going to ask the writer of that to read it now.
Hi, I'm Chris Bennett, and I work for the Tompkins County Youth Services Department, and I'll read my nomination letter. On behalf of the Joint Youth Commission, please accept this letter to nominate Jonathan Gomes Selman for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. Jonathan is a senior at Ithaca High School. He resides in the village of Cayuga Heights. I first met Jonathan a little over a year ago when I took over as liaison from our department to the Joint Youth Commission, the JYC, which encompasses the towns of Ithaca and Caroline and the villages of Cayuga Heights and Lansing. The only youth member, Jonathan has been active with the JYC for 4 years. Jonathan is conscientious about attending meetings and participating fully in budget discussions, program evaluations, and future planning. A year ago, when the JYC faced a funding cut for one of its youth programs, Jonathan spoke eloquently to the town board in defense of the funding, and the town board ultimately restored a significant portion of the funding. Over the past year, I've come to learn that there is much more to Jonathan than his involvement with the JYC. In a nutshell, Jonathan is the complete package. He is smart, kind, committed to making a difference, a leader, a musician, a scholar, an athlete, a volunteer, an innovator, and a friend. Here are some details. He was selected for the prestigious research institute at the Boyce Thompson Institute for Plant Research at Cornell last summer. His focus was in the field of bioinformatics, specifically genome editing. As a 10th grader, he created a blog, Stumbling Into Science and Math. He continues to write stories on interesting developments in the world of math and science in ways that teach the reader something new and unconventional. He has been co-president of the Ithaca High Computer Science Club for 3 years and participated as a 10th and 11th grader on the IHS Code Robotics team. He has served for 2 years as a Link Crew leader at Ithaca High School. Link Crew pairs incoming students at Ithaca High with a Link Crew leader to help engage and guide the new students and make them feel comfortable and welcome in the new school environment. Jonathan has participated in his school's concert band and pep band as a tenor saxophonist. In addition to his involvement with the Joint Youth Commission, he has volunteered weekly at the Science Center for 3 years. He uses his knowledge and passion for science to help inspire children from many backgrounds as they explore the fun educational exhibits. He frequently runs mini workshops for children at the Science Center. Jonathan has participated for 4 years as a member of the Ithaca High School undefeated varsity tennis team. This past summer, he and his doubles partner won the Section 4 tournament and competed in the state tournament. Jonathan is a National Merit Scholarship semifinalist and National Honor Society member. His academic successes include recognition for achievement in math, science, Latin, French, computer science, and writing. It's not my intention that this letter sound like a resume or a college application, but there are so many positive aspects about Jonathan that you should know about. In working on this letter of nomination, one member of the Joint Youth Commission shared this anecdote. Some years ago, my son named our best rooster after Jonathan because he was the nicest and the smartest. Jonathan has set a high standard for his peer group. He serves as a positive role model to students at Ithaca High and in the larger community. He is very deserving of recognition by the Tompkins County as a distinguished youth. And I submitted this letter on behalf of the entire Joint Youth Commission, which includes Henriette Bulmer, Lorraine Moran, Christiane White, Naveen Thoramala, and liaisons Rich DiPaolo and Tim Seeley. Thank you.
This is the official plaque, which I will present to you now.
Thank you.
And the sponsors, can you hear me? The sponsors each give something, a gift card from Purity, another T-shirt, I'm sure you can wear that, a towel you can wipe off your tennis racket with. And that's the Purity one also. And finally, from Bangs Ambulance, something to keep you safe, first aid. And if you would like to say anything to the legislature, I'd be happy to give you this mic.
I just want to say that it's really an honor to receive this recognition, and I would like to thank Chris and all of the members of the commission for nominating me, and Chris wrote such an amazing letter with the help of the rest of the commission. Over the last 4 years, I've really enjoyed being a part of the commission. They've been so welcoming, and I've learned a really lot from the commission. Thank you all for this recognition. It means a lot. Thank you.
Can you introduce your family? Sorry. Tell us who your family is.
Oh, so this is my father, Bart Selman, and my mother, Carla Gomes.
Thank you. Woo-hoo.
Thank you.
We need to do this every month. I know we haven't had as many nominations as we've had in the past, but we need to continue to let folks know out there that this is available, and there are many deserving youth every year that should be receiving this award. We'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for anyone to speak to the legislature for up to 3 minutes. If you want to speak to us, we need to have a blue card.
Do you have any blue cards?
Just point, we don't have any. If anyone's out there who would like to sign a blue card in the back and send it up, please do that. I won't read the rules unless we're going to have someone. So I guess not. So we'll just move on to the privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Do we have any out there? I don't see any. Then we'll go to privilege of the floor for legislators. Are we any of those out there? Oh, there are a bunch. Who'd like to speak? Carol Chalk.
Well, we read the rules. Going to be 1 minute. Sorry.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. Does that count?
I didn't hear
my
you.
Minute?
I'm sorry.
I wanted to just at least notice that New York State has made taken two pretty important actions in this week and last week. I don't know if people saw in today's Ithaca Journal that Andrew Cuomo has heeded the call of Tompkins County and is calling for going to require a safety analysis of a pipeline, a major pipeline. It's the Algonquin pipeline. Fittingly, he's chosen as the first one to require this safety analysis, which the results of which I assume some of it might be relevant to other pipelines. It's close to Indian Point, and so the risks for this one are probably it's a good place to have chosen. And of course, I wanted to recognize the decisions by the governor and the Public Service Commission to really stick to the reforming the energy vision and to start making that a reality. It's been the part of it that involves Tompkins County has been really tough and continues to be tough, but it is a decision. We should recognize it, and the pipeline kind of investigation it really represents a decision, I think, to invest in the start investing in the infrastructure of the future instead of the fossil fuel infrastructure of the past. It's a big step for New York State to take. And it's always hard when our community finds itself divided over issues, big issues. And this situation was that much harder, I think, because of the length of the process and the fact that the final decision was not in our hands. It wasn't something we were going to do. It was something we had to go and weigh into the state. Just to recognize what the decision is and isn't, people should realize, first of all, that nothing's really going to happen for 2 years. The continued coverage by the public of through the liability support services agreement means that we will still be covering $4 million a month to keep a plant operational until there are power lines in place. Basically, what the decision said was that the Public Service Commission said is we're not asking the public to foot the bill for an old technology when there is a smart energy choice at a fraction of the cost. And as hard as it's been, I hope that we can unite now over a request to ask the state to start doing the other piece of what it has promised to do, which is start looking at a just transition for workers, for communities. And that's something we should be able to be united on. And in the 2 years that remain, while the transmission lines are installed, I'd like to see us go beyond that and come together as a community to work for outcomes, sustainable outcomes, both economically, financially, and environmentally, that support the workers of this community, the Lansing School District, the town of Lansing, the residents of Tompkins County, the New York State, and the world. And it is the direction the world is going. I'm just hoping that we can be united now. And I was not just posturing the last few years. I will be just as active going to New York State and the contacts that I've made there to make sure that we have the best shot at trying to get something in there that is a transition and that is an economic boost for our community. So thanks to everybody for sticking in and staying respectful during this whole difficult period.
Others would like to speak. Martha.
Well, today is the beginning of Women's History Month, and the governor issued a press release. That's what he does.
Yes.
Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul and SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpfer and Senate Democratic Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins came together in the Capitol for a brief ceremony. And there's one of the things that they're announcing is that the state capitol, the museum, New York State Museum, is having a new exhibit which celebrates and recognizes the contribution of women attorneys to culture and society. Maybe not the broadest kind of celebration, but okay. So at any rate, one of the things that I've been watching and trying to lobby for is that there's going to be a centennial commission, Women's Suffrage 100th Anniversary Commemoration Commission, preparing events and programs for the 2017 100th Anniversary of women getting the right to vote in New York State. And Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul has been appointed to that. She's the governor's appointment, so she'll probably end up chairing the commission. I think that's good news for the work of that body getting perhaps some funding, which hasn't been assured yet at all, and having some truly broad and diverse kind of activities to celebrate that important anniversary coming up. So just look for other events and things about women's history, and maybe Leslie, you want to talk about Sister Friends as one of them,
unless
tickets are all sold.
Go right ahead.
Well, Leslie and I have worked on a special event in Women's History Month that's called Sister Friends Luncheon, and it's Friday, March 18th. And I guess at the Emerson Suites at Ithaca College, and I guess probably are a few tickets left, mostly at GIAC, you think? Do you have any with you, Leslie? Okay. So it's always a really exciting event that includes a lot of school girls, a lot of girls from middle school on up, and have a great time with artists and vendors, diverse vendors selling crafts. And I encourage anybody who has Friday the 18th a little bit of time to go. Thanks.
Anyone else? Julie Kiefer.
Well, Martha, you're being modest. I think you should also mention that you're the guest speaker on Women in History, I guess, Women Politicians, at the League of Women Voters Soup and Bread Lunch. So you might want to plug that, too.
That's the 13th or so. I think that's the 12th, Saturday the 12th, for the League of Women Voters. Thanks, Julie.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on. Chair's report, we're still trying to work out the joint luncheon with Cortland. Seems like the two dates, we had more that were on the Wednesday, and they had more that were on the Friday. But we're going to try to work out, and we certainly won't be able to accommodate everybody, but we'll try to do the best we can. I have one chair's appointment. It should be in your red folder, and that is to the Bicentennial Commemoration Commission, and that's Bruce Estes. Bruce is working very hard helping us update the brochures for each of the towns in the city. We had done those quite a few years ago, the town and village historians and city historians, and we look forward to having the new editions of those for our bicentennial next year. have reports from staff. Our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I just have two items on my list tonight, and I think the legislature is aware of both. We have submitted our budget, state budget priorities and legislative priorities now to our delegation. We sent those last week. We're now trying to set up meetings with our legislators. As soon as we can lock in some possible dates, I will advise you. So if you'd like to join us in any of those meetings, you can. So we're going to shoot for the next couple of weeks to meet with our legislative delegation. Some of the major points that we've included in the priorities list are very familiar to the legislature. Beginning with, we've requested a significant increase in FTE aid for the community college. I think you know that the state has been pretty derelict in terms of their supporting community colleges. The colleges this year have asked for a fairly aggressive increase in FTE aid. It's $285 per student, and we've gotten behind it. And I will tell you also, I think our county has helped in enlisting NYSAC to also take up this cause. Historically, NYSAC has been a little reluctant to get behind increases in community college aid, believing that for every dollar that goes someplace else, there's a dollar less available for counties. They've gotten past that this year, and they've become a very vocal source of lobbying support for community colleges, which is good, obviously, because it is really creating pressure on local property tax bases to sustain support for community colleges, given that we have tax caps and other mandates we have to deal with. So that's an important development. We've asked for the state to pass legislation that's in front of both houses right now, to have the state take over a period of 4 years, the cost of indigent legal defense. We would keep the operation of the assigned counsel program local, but the state would pick up the full cost. It has strong leadership support in Albany, so we're hopeful that makes progress this year. We've asked for a restoration of aid for public health, which has been eroding over the past several years. We've asked to get that back to where it was and should be. We're not totally parochial here. We've asked for a fair share of the aid that's been proposed by the governor for public transit on behalf of TCAT. We've asked for our fair share of road and bridge money that's been set aside in lump sum, and at this point, really not identified in terms of where the money will go and how it's going to be allocated. We've asked for our fair share of housing and homeless money that the governor has set aside in his budget. We've also asked for, and this picks up on a resolution that was passed by this legislature, we've asked for approval of the minimum wage to $15 with the proviso that there would be changes in state reimbursement formulas that would accommodate that increase in wages for places like the Racker Center and other institutions, not-for-profits, that depend on reimbursements from the state, often through Medicaid, to be able to make payroll. We've asked for our fair share of airport aid. You recall that the governor's proposed $40 million allocations for five airports. We think that really doesn't favor smaller regional airports like ours. As many needs as we have, we don't have $40 million worth of need, and that shouldn't disqualify us from aid. So we've asked for a more reasonable allocation of that money. We've asked for mandate relief, as we always do. Finally, we've asked the state to approve the legislation that you asked for a few weeks ago, which is to allow a real property tax exemption that supports affordable housing. And you recall that issue, so that's in our packet. So that, again, is with the delegation, and we will be knocking on doors over the next couple of weeks to explain those in greater detail. The other thing that's on my list, and the last thing, there's a letter on your desks that has been drafted to go to our state delegation as well. This picks up on what Carol was talking about. I got a call from Mike Ziegler as well, who I think was prompted by Senator Nozzolio, saying that the governor has apparently set aside, we hear, $19 million to help cushion the blow of some of these closures that have been discussed. And while not conceding anything, there's a need to get our name on that list. So as this program develops and as allocations are made, we want to make sure that our community is among those who, if that compensation is needed, receives it. So on your desk is a draft letter. It's addressed to Senator Nozzolio, but individual letters would go to each of our delegation. I have a signature sheet with me tonight. So if you're comfortable with the letter, at the end of the meeting, before you leave, if you wouldn't mind putting your signature on this page. We're also asking for the Lansing Central School District Superintendent to sign it, the town supervisor of Lansing, and the chief of the Lansing Fire Department, all of which would be affected by any reduction in property taxes or pilots at the plant. So their names would also be attached to this letter that we would hope to get out this week. So, again, before you leave, if you're comfortable with the letter, please stop by and sign this signature sheet. And that's it. That's my report.
Questions for Joe? Carol?
Well, I just want to say, that's a powerful list you've put together. Just who's involved in putting together the list and going to lobby for it?
I put together the list. We talked about it in the Monday morning meetings. And anybody who would like to attend, I think you may have gone to some last year. Many of you have attended these meetings. As soon as we can get a few days on the legislators, on the state legislators' calendars, then I'll put out an all call to the legislature, and anybody who'd like to attend is welcome to attend.
Okay. Can we get a copy of what you just read or
Certainly.
A summary of the
yep.
items? Thanks.
Thank you, Joe. Jonathan Wood is our county attorney.
Thanks. I'm sure you all heard that Judge Mulvey was appointed to the appellate division for the third department. So I wanted to say what that means for Tompkins County, or at least what I think it means for Tompkins County. First of all, I don't expect Judge Mulvey to move to Albany. I expect that he will keep his chambers here. The way that works is appellate judges generally keep their chambers and they go to Albany just to hear cases about 1 week a month. It also means that we currently have two judges and traditionally two Supreme Court judges. We have what they call a resident judge and a non-resident judge. Judge Mulvey has, of course, been the resident judge. We will very likely have two judges, but neither of whom will be a resident judge. The interesting issue is who the person who would be appointed to be the non-resident judge to replace basically Judge Mulvey is typically appointed by the, well, is always appointed by the administrative judge for the 6th Judicial District, which is, of course, Judge Mulvey, leading to the issue that there probably won't be anybody appointed until they first replace Judge Mulvey as administrative judge. And then he would appoint, or whoever, he or she, whoever would be the administrative judge, would appoint a non-resident judge to basically handle the cases that Judge Mulvey has been handling. That's what I expect to happen. It would probably take, given that Judge Mulvey is the chief administrative judge for the judicial district, and they would have to fill that position before filling the position of our non-resident judge. I expect it could take a month or two before we know who would be assigned to Tompkins County. So the only other thing I have to say is I expect the executive session on real estate to be very short. That's my report.
Beyond that, I have Peter and then Martha, then I have a question.
Just a quick question. What's the concept of a non-resident judge? What's that mean?
Typically in this county, we have two Supreme Court judges, one who basically has his chambers here, which is Judge Mulvey and was Judge Relihan before him, and then a non-resident judge who now is Judge Rumsey, another judge who comes in periodically. So basically there's been one resident judge and one non-resident judge, and those two judges would handle the Tompkins County cases. So now there probably, I expect there to be two non-resident judges and no resident judge.
Martha.
So is that typical that a county wouldn't have either of their judges be resident?
It's probably not unusual. Well, I mean, Judge Mulvey is actually the first appellate division judge ever appointed from Tompkins County. But it would certainly not be very unusual for a large county, but not for a small county. So, you know, certain small counties don't have any resident judges, and, you know, we're at the level where we have two judges and one resident judge in terms of size, but given that one of them will now be on the appellate division, we'll have two non-resident judges. So it's probably, it's not unusual if you're a very small county. It would be very unusual if you're a very large county.
Okay, so... But he gets to appoint his successor?
No, they would. There is no successor per se. It does not create a vacancy. He is currently the chief administrative judge for the 6th Judicial District. Okay, so now that he's going to be an appellate division judge, he has to leave that position. So that position will have to be replaced by someone more senior. We don't know who that's going to be, and then that person would appoint whoever is appointed to that position, the chief administrative judge for the 6th Judicial District, would then appoint the person who's going to handle Tompkins County cases.
I've heard you say those words twice now. I'll stop asking what they mean. Thank you, Jonathan.
Sure. Anna?
So I guess on, as a follow-up, this shouldn't influence or impact our ability to handle cases here at all, because once that sixth district attorney is, or judge, I'm sorry, is appointed, or I think you said appointed, they will identify someone that will be able to handle all the cases here. So we shouldn't have a problem handling cases.
No, I mean, cases will, all the cases will still be appointed. There may be somewhat more travel for attorneys because neither judge would be in resident. And it may be a delay of a couple months in doing that. But overall, it's not going to mean there will be cases covered.
Just a delay.
Right.
Jonathan, do you see us having to fit out another chambers?
I don't think so, because I think that Judge Mulvey will keep that chambers and that the new administrative judge will appoint someone who's just a non-resident of Tompkins County, meaning that they would come from their chambers, as Judge Rumsey currently does. His chambers is in Cortland, so it could be one of the other judges, like Judge O'Shea. She could come here and be the other non-resident judge, but we don't know who that would be at this point, but it's not likely. I mean, it's possible the administrative judge could do that, but I don't think that's a likely scenario.
This is one more example of the rather unusual court structure we have in New York State, where we don't have one Supreme Court judge for every county. Some counties have more than one. It's by the districts. I can remember when Judge Ellison was elected quite a few years ago out of Schuyler County. His chambers were in Schuyler, and we had no sitting Supreme Court judge at all in Tompkins County. That was, I think, after Judge Bryant retired. I can remember when Judge Yesowicz out of Cortland was appointed to the appellate division, and he had chambers in Cortland, but he never heard cases in Cortland, so you'd always have to, somebody else would have to go over there. It's rather unusual. We don't have judges appointed to, we don't have a separate mid-level court. We have a separate court of appeals with judges that sit just there, but we have these mid-level courts. We have four divisions, appellate divisions, and they are the Supreme Court judges. And we call them Supreme Court judges because they have supreme jurisdiction. They can hear cases from any part of the state. That's why our Supreme Court is the lowest court and not the highest court. Just giving a little background here and a little bit of the confusion. How it'll work out here, we have a lot of cases in Tompkins County. I'm still waiting to see. But certainly we want to wish congratulations to Judge Mulvey. It's an important thing for him to be recognized by his peers to move up a step. Dooley, then Peter.
Jonathan, there must be an existing list of all the potential 6th Judicial District judges who could be appointed. Is that right?
That is correct, and it would be...
So how many of them are there?
That's a good question. My guess is, I only have to guess, but someplace between a dozen and 20. But, yeah, it would have to be from the list of people who are judges in the Supreme Court judges in the 6th Judicial District, yes.
Thank you.
Peter?
I just wonder, is it odd? It seems odd to me that Judge Mulvey, who will now hear cases in Albany, has his chambers here. I would think that it makes a whole lot more sense for him to have his chambers in Albany.
Actually, that's typical of appellate courts, both in federal and state, is judges typically, when they hear appellate cases, they sit as a panel, and they tend to do that usually like once a week or so every month, and then they typically go back to their hometowns. And that's the same in the federal system. That's how it works.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else for Jonathan? Thank you, John. Director of Finance is Rick Snyder.
I had planned to give you January sales tax figures, but we hadn't had the time to do the receiving of that monies or the disbursement. But just looking at the broad brush approach, by just seeing how much money came into our coffers, it appears that January of this year is about 4.5% decrease from last January's. So I just thought I would bring that to your attention. It's probably not as bad as some months, because if we look at January of 2015, we had an increase in that particular month of 10.3% compared to its prior year. So that was a spiking month that back in January 2015 for whatever reasons. So when our sales tax comes in about 4.5% compared to a previous year's month that was at 10.3% higher, we're right around average for the month. So I should be able to bring you more details at the next time that we meet on the January sales tax. I also wanted to update you on the audits that we're going through right now. We're still conducting, as far as the county's books are still open for 2015, which means we're still doing year-end work, we're still doing accruals. I think our last check run, there may be one or two sporadic checks, but our last check run for 2015 was done yesterday. So for all intents and purposes, most of the revenues have been claimed, most of the expenditures have been booked. We still have about 6 weeks of year-end work to do before the auditors come in. So looking at a scale of completion, we're only about 8 or 10% into the year-end closing for the county's books and for the audit of the county. There's three other audits that I'm involved in right now that are moving ahead a lot more quickly. One of them is the TCIDA, and that field work is completed, and we're going to be reviewing with members of the IDA audit committee those financial statements in about 2 weeks. So that audit has gone very quickly and has gone very smoothly. So we're rounding the curve to near completion on the TCIDA. The Tompkins Task, which is the Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation, we have completed that year-end closing. That audit is nearly finished. We should be receiving financial statements from the auditors in the next week or two. So that one is at around 95% complete. And the other really big one that takes up a lot of my time is the Health Insurance Consortium. We're right in the middle of closing that year for 2015. We began work on the JURAT, which is the year-end financial report that all health insurance consortiums have to report to the state. We just began that last week. So we'll be working on finishing up the consortium's year-end work in anticipation of the audit, which those auditors come in around the end of March. So we're about 50%, maybe 60% of our way through the year-end closing and the associated audit for the health insurance consortium. So I thought I'd let you know that those are the four main audits that we are working with. If things seem to move a little bit slow as far as us getting back to you, the legislators, or different groups, it's because this is probably about the most busy time of our year, where we're working a lot of hours to try to get these year-end books close. So I just thank you for your patience. If we don't return your call as quickly as we normally would or our emails, and that's all I have to report for this evening.
Thanks, Rick. Questions? We're just overwhelmed by the sales tax report. We have our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger, with us tonight. And we don't hear as much as we probably should from Paula, but she works really hard on a lot of our policy issues and a lot of the tough things that we need to do in this county. And tonight she's here to share with us the annual county compliance report. Paula?
And I think we'll need just a minute to...
All right, let's suspend while we put down the screens. Okay, let's resume. Go ahead, Paula, when you're ready.
Okay. Thank you. Let me make sure everyone can hear me. Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Fine.
It's my pleasure to present to you the year-end progress report for the county's compliance program. This is focusing on our operating year for 2015, and this includes all of the activities of your county compliance committee. Also included in this presentation this evening is going to be just a general overview of the program, a little bit of the background and what our program contains. I'm adding that for a couple of reasons. We have some new legislators that have joined us since our last report, so this will be your orientation. And for the rest of you, this serves as your annual compliance training. So with that said, I want to just call your attention to a couple of items that are at your place setting. One is a copy of the 2015 year-end report. The other is a document that has a sort of a blue banner going down the side of it, and that's one of our compliance fact sheets that gives a really good summary of a lot of the detail I'm going to offer tonight about the program itself. And the other, which is the real gem, and that is the attestation form. So at the end of this presentation, if you would just simply sign and date the form, and just pass it to the front, so those to my right can pass them up to Jonathan, and those to my left can pass it up to Legislator Robertson, and I'll pick those up at the end of the presentation. And that means you don't have to come see me. I mean, you can, but you don't have to, at least not for this. The presentation is, like I said, going to give a little background about the need for our compliance program, a little bit of the detail of the eight elements that make up our program. I'll also review a little bit of our program documentation and where you can find that information at any given time. Of course, the year-end progress report, one of the most exciting pieces of reading that you'll get all year. And then the work that we have planned as our compliance committee for 2016. Of course, we'll have a minute or two for questions, but like I said, you can stop by my office at any time for more detail on the program. So why do we have a compliance program? Most people think we're government, we're policy, we make all the rules and regulations. Of course, we're in compliance. We just can't say that we do it anymore. We have to demonstrate it. So the issue now is more of the accountability requirements that are being placed on us by many of the regulatory agencies. They have expanded regulations that call for this. One big example is expanded rules on HIPAA. There are changes in economics that call for a greater emphasis on us to demonstrate how well we manage risk and control waste. There is an increased need for transparency in almost all of our operations and practices, in particular data management as well as reporting. And then, of course, regulatory authorities are passing on that monitoring function to us as localities. So what's included in a compliance program? What actually do we do? This really is all about identifying and reducing risk and also ensuring that all of our policies and procedures are meeting those standards set by regulatory authorities. A very simple little paragraph there, but it does take a lot of work year-round. Just as a reminder, our program was adopted in August of 2011. This body passed a resolution that put the program in place, as well as the compliance committee and a charge for the work that we do. Overall, our vision is to sustain a strong and consistent culture of regulatory compliance throughout county government. I would say that it is probably a very unique vision to a lot of local governments, because when you consider the makeup of our organization, we're 27 different departments, 27 different technical disciplines. When you talk about compliance, I think you can agree that on how one manages an airport versus how you manage solid waste, versus how you administer treatment to a mental health client, versus how you manage a jail. All of these are going to be quite different. So to try to put together a comprehensive program that keeps awareness high and making sure that we're all doing the things that our various authorities ask us to do, it's a quite comprehensive undertaking. But we have adopted a proactive agenda, and we integrate best practice along with all of the legal requirements. And our primary focus, once again, is to improve our monitoring systems and controls, to identify and mitigate risk, and to demonstrate transparency. So how does this benefit the organization overall? Well, what we work towards is making sure leadership, staff, all of our practices, policies, including all of our technologies, are working in harmony together to manage risk. But we also are providing our staff with standards so that they can identify or reduce the likelihood of unethical behavior. They have a way of identifying problems. It allows us to quickly and accurately respond to compliance concerns. And I'll get into that a little more in our report about some of the monitoring systems that we have. And, of course, it creates a more proactive mindset rather than a reactive one that potentially saves us time and money. I mentioned earlier that our program is actually comprised of 8 elements. I will tell you that if you look in local government or the private sector or higher education, you're going to see these similar elements. Some of them have 7 elements, some of them have 9, but basically you're going to find this in any comprehensive compliance program. So, of course, we have a set of policies and procedures. We have a documented disciplinary action procedure, which, by the way, is being reviewed this year. We provide training to staff and governing boards. There are routine compliance monitoring processes that we go through, steps for corrective action. We have a whistleblower policy with non-retaliation protections. Of course, we have confidential reporting, and then our compliance committee. And speaking of the compliance committee, these are the brave souls that serve with me all year long. We actually meet formally 4 times a year, but we have work that goes on throughout the year. The newest member to our group is the Information Security Compliance Officer. You might have known that as our HIPAA Compliance Officer, but we found that that has been expanded to include a number of IT and data management items in addition to HIPAA. In terms of our program documentation, we do have a comprehensive compliance program document. I'm going to show you where to find that, but I'm not going to open it up. It's about 40 pages of riveting reading, but it does give you the soup to nuts, if you will, of our program. Of course, there is our code of ethics, and you actually did a review of that a couple of years ago, so that's fairly up to date now. We have our administrative policy manual. That's where you will find things like our whistleblower policy and others that I consider like the anchor policies for our compliance program. We have our fact sheet series, and that was one of the samples that's at your place setting. Periodically, we try to put together a fact sheet that's something that's a quick and easy reference for a staff to use as a refresher or giving an orientation to new employees. We also require annual training on our compliance program, obviously the year-end report, which is the reason why I'm speaking to you today. And then I'm going to just do something rather quick here. Let's hope it works. On our county website, we have a compliance program page that provides all of the information that I've been speaking about with you this evening. To the left of the screen here, you will see a menu at the very top. I mentioned that we have a comprehensive compliance program document. That's where you'll find that. A link to our code of ethics, a link to our policy manual. Voila, the 2015 year-end report is up and ready to read. The page explains our philosophy with regard to our program. You can scroll down and read previous year-end reports, so starting back to when our program began. So for those of you that really want to take a walk down memory lane to see how far we've come, we also have information here on reporting any compliance violations. We have a 24-hour, what I call, compliance helpline that goes directly into my office, so people can make an anonymous report of any compliance concerns or any information breaches. They can also submit something to me in writing as well. I mentioned earlier our compliance fact sheets, so there are links to those, and our anchor policies, our whistleblower policy, and our exclusion screening policy. So all of this information is available on our website. When you go to our compliance homepage, you just simply look to the bottom right-hand corner. There'll be like a little check mark icon that will say compliance program, and it will take you to this page. So the year-end progress report, informative reading. I recommend it highly. We try to keep a standard framework for this report. We try to keep it just about four pages, four sections, so you get a year-at-a-glance of what we've done, our key accomplishments, any issues and opportunities, and what you can expect for the coming program year. This is one of the key ways that we demonstrate to you, as well as to the rest of the workforce and any of outside authorities that care to know, how we're demonstrating our responsiveness to our program mission. In terms of what we did this year, there was a lot of policy review, and I would say that that usually is something that goes on almost every year. This year, one of the biggest things that we did was actually to do a review of what we affectionately refer to as the policy on the policy. That's policy 01. It really does map out how we do policy amendments, and so it was time to actually deal with that because we have a number of other policies coming down the pike. For example, our ITS department is working on a social media policy as well as a data management policy. And then we have a number of personnel policies that are coming up for a review. Obviously, there was a staff training. The annual compliance training is really the responsibility of the department heads, but I do go out and assist with that. So I did about six sessions last year, covered about 75 employees. But training is really ongoing throughout the year. Anytime a department needs it, all they need to do is just give us a call. We also invited the New York State Comptroller's Office to come and visit with us this past year. They have an audit section that focuses on IT risk management. Of course, they don't ever tell us when they're going to do an audit, but they were able to sort of let us know the kinds of things that they look at when they come out to do an audit. We learned a new definition for the acronym CIA, which is confidentiality, integrity, and accessibility. And that's what they look at when they look at how well we manage our IT systems and our data. They also introduced us to a philosophy, which is what they call the principle of least privilege. And what they're really asking us to do now is to take an inventory of both of not only our data, but our data management practices. That one of the biggest areas of risk is having access to too much all the time. And so we are going to be focusing a little more on that in the coming year, but it was very helpful of them to come out and sort of give us a little bit of guidance on that. Last year, you might have remembered that I introduced you to our new breach reporting process. So once again, talking about talking about data management and the potential of data breaches, we do have a breach reporting process that we implemented last year. We now moved that paper process to an online process. And so you can go to that compliance webpage that we just left a few minutes ago. There's a button there that talks about breach reporting, and it takes you right into an online tracking system. I always look that this looks so much better on the screen when I put that compliance word cloud together. It looks a little dark there, and I don't mean compliance to come across in such a dark way, but it does emphasize a lot of the things that we look at when we talk about compliance. You know, I emphasize risk, but there's security, there are audits, there's what do you do with the audit findings, how do you change procedures, how do you look at such things like disaster recovery. All of these kinds of things are make up some of the conversations that we have when our compliance committee meets. But some of the other items that are on our radar screen in terms of issues and opportunities are taking an organizational approach to how we train for compliance. There's a lot going on there. Remember I said we have several different departments. They all have their own compliance training needs relative to their own disciplines. But we're trying to find a way so that it doesn't become a hardship, so that every time you turn around, you're doing more training, but you don't have time to actually do the work that you're there to do. And so we really are looking more at how we do that better and more efficiently organization-wide. I mentioned already about data management and access controls. We are steadily still working on keeping our policies current and up to date. And even that also is a challenge because some of the same people that help to write the policy content are the people that have to also do the work. And then there's also the challenge of reporting up. We realize that there are some routine audits and things that go on at the department level, but we also think that there are some critical findings that come about, and we're trying to encourage departments to actually report them up to the county administrator so that we have a better idea of what regulatory authorities are looking for. And some of the more critical areas, particularly when these are reoccurring findings, if there are things that we need to change in our own practices. So finally, here's what we have on tap for 2016. We are in the process of developing a comprehensive Title VI plan. This past summer, I was invited to take an online Title VI compliance survey. I don't get warm and fuzzy when I'm invited to take a compliance survey, right? And so this survey put an emphasis on both ADA, American with Disabilities, LEP, Limited English Proficiency, and MWBE, Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprises. So for the majority of the survey, I would say that we did very well in how we responded, but there were certainly some items that are in need of improvement. You all might know a couple of years ago, Karen Baer did an upgrade to our limited English proficiency plan. There is a lot that we need to do in the area of ADA, one of which is updating our ADA transition plan and how we assess our various buildings and access and things like that. And then we are also looking to put an MWBE program in place, and right now we don't have such a program. But all of those fall under the Title VI umbrella, so that'll be something that will keep us busy throughout the year. We will be revisiting our exclusion screening policy. That's the policy whereby when we're looking to contract with contractors or vendors, even hiring new employees, we have to do a particular screening to make sure that they're not on lists that are not favorable to state and federal government authorities. So we're going to be revisiting that policy. It's up for review. We actually use an outside third party to do our screening for us. So we're also going to be looking at the competitiveness of those screening services. When we started this about 5 years ago, there weren't a lot of companies out there that did that kind of screening. So there's a little more competition out there now, and we're just going to see if we're doing as best as we can for the price that we pay. And then, of course, continuous ongoing support to our ITS and personnel departments as they continue to develop new policies or upgrade or revise existing policies. And I talked about that further. So that ends my report. if there are any questions.
Questions? I don't see any hands. That's very thorough. Yeah. A lot of information in a short time. Jim?
Yeah, no. This is the group of people that work on it, your committee, right? The seven people?
Yes,
that
that's right. Yeah, that's at the last page of the report. It's handy to have the county attorney write down the hall from you.
And then you get help from Kip and Lauren Cottrell at ITF.
Yes, yes. They were very helpful in preparing sections of the report.
I think it's important that people know on the legislature who the people are who do this work, and it's not the most glamorous by any stretch, but it clearly is important to keep us in line. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Anna Kellis.
Two questions. Just one out of curiosity. Do we have or contract with any external company to test our the strength of our security system for breach, you know, basically try to hack our system at all? Do we ever do anything like that?
I'm going to say yes, but that's handled more out of our ITS department, so that would be Greg Potter. I'm not exactly sure entities that are hired or when they come in, but he does use several different consultant entities to sort of give us guidance, and that was also part of the reason why we brought in the comptroller's office, you know, to make sure that we're getting the right guidance that we need.
And you were talking about changes or reviews, updates to the minority and women-owned business category. Can you talk a little bit about where we are and what they were looking for and any discrepancy between those two, what our goals are for this coming year?
Well, we do not have any formal established goals for Tompkins County. Most of what we've done is taken the lead on what the state has done. The governor upped the ante at the beginning of 2015 to 30%, saying any of the state aid that we get, we have to look to spend 30% of that funding on women or minority-owned businesses. Where we lack is that we don't have a program that speaks proactively to doing that, right? And I think that once the state upped the ante, it began to take some of our staff by surprise. So, in other words, they began seeing this MWBE acronym in a lot of their grant paperwork, and they really weren't up to speed on what it all meant and why. So we have to be a little more responsible on our end, a little more proactive in both educating staff, but then in an indirect way also educating those minority and women-owned businesses in our community, because in some cases we are doing business, but if they're not officially certified with the state, we don't get credit, so to speak, for doing business with them. So it is just being a little more proactive and educating a little better.
And do we have a list of those businesses in the county, and we feel there's sufficient to meet that 30%, or is that something?
Yeah. Well, our finance department keeps a proactive list of the people that we do business with, and for those that are officially certified, the state has an online database that's very easily accessible. Yes.
Thank you.
Carol Chock.
Yeah, if you have information that you could share either now or maybe later, if I'm the only one interested in it, I'd be interested in knowing how many episodes there are in a year of people using the systems that are now put in place to report anything in any of the categories. And especially, and as that compares to what we used to get in reports that we had to investigate before the whole system was put into place, if it's, you know, enhanced the confidence of our employees that there's a place they can go when they have concerns, or whether just having it all so cut and dried has made it harder to do so. That would be interesting to know.
I would say that for any real compliance concerns, you already know about them, and usually we speak about them in detail in exec session. You know, fortunately, I don't have a lot of those helpline calls coming in. Oftentimes, I think externally people think that it's a tip line, so typically I have to refer them to the sheriff's office because they really don't have anything to do with us in compliance. The only thing I will say is it has prompted in a good way. It's prompted a lot of staff to call me directly and say, I'm wondering whether this is a compliance issue, or I'm wondering whether we should change our process on how we do X or Y. So it's not so much that I have a lot of compliance violations coming in. It's more of people their awareness has been raised, and they're questioning things in a good way.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, I'm sort of wondering about how much activity goes on, and one question I had was, how many people are there here, including yourself, or how many FTEs are spent doing this compliance operation? That's question number one. And question number two is, how many incidents do you find per year on the average of uncompliance or lack of compliance?
To answer the FTE question, there are no official FTEs assigned to. Well, I'll clarify that a little bit. When I was hired almost 10 years ago, compliance was not a part of my job description. So this is more of the previous experience that I just happened to bring to the table, and as luck would have it, I'm your compliance officer. We do have the information security compliance officer. That is Roger Kutcherfell, that's in the ITS department, simply because technology is such an integral part of our operations across the board. And remember, I spoke earlier about having the comptroller's office come in and tell us a little bit about their IT audit. So we knew we had to have a person to keep a closer eye on those kinds of things. And also that's related to a lot of the HIPAA regs that come into play with a lot of our operations, particularly in the health department and mental health and so forth. But I wouldn't say that there is a cadre of staff that carry the title of, compliance X. I would say that people have just found ways to work this into their daily routine. And that's part of the reason why we structured our program in such a way that what I ask people to do is think of compliance more in terms of best business practices and not as this other extra thing that you're being asked to do. The other question you asked, Peter, is more along the lines of my response to Carol, in that, luckily I don't have a lot of non-compliance issues. It's really more now that awareness is being raised, that people are asking the questions. And like I said, any of the other serious compliance matters we have brought to you as they arise in exec session, just because of the confidentiality nature of the issue.
Okay, thank you. Dooley?
Am I speaking into the microphone? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was reading part of your handout that referred to a software package, Varonis.
Varonis, correct, yes.
Is that in place already?
I don't know for certain. It was just at the end of 2015 the county administrator authorized the purchase of the software. So I would need Greg Potter to actually confirm if it's all in place or if they're in testing stages. But we were all extremely happy when Joe said yes, because this is going to make life a lot easier for us in terms of data management and who has access to what and when.
So under just before the end of the issues and opportunities section, in the last paragraph, Varonis is being discussed, and then it says, offsetting the cost of having to purchase more storage space. If you get, I didn't know we were purchasing storage space. I thought the county agreed to put everything on the infamous cloud. So tell me what that means.
Well, we haven't all moved to the cloud quite yet. And every day, data is created. You know what I'm saying? Every day, somebody creates a new document, expands on a document, or whatever. And every day, they sort of forget some of those documents that they created last month, last year, 5 years ago. And all of that is using up storage space. And so Veronis will help us help others clean up that data. And probably in concert with where when we migrate to the cloud, as you just suggested, that will also help. But we haven't totally done that migration yet, and it'll be a while.
So where is the storage space now?
On our county servers.
It's not all on one server somewhere.
Oh, no.
It's all on. Right. I noticed in the legal ads recently, Streeter Associates is advertising for minority and women business enterprises to let them know they exist and bid on their contracts. There were three of them in today's paper again, so the message has gotten out.
Yes.
Thank you.
Leslie McBean, Claiborne.
Thank you. Paula, thank you for your work on this. You know, from a WDIC perspective, certainly we are excited to see some of this because there are areas that are of interest to us as well. Could you do me a favor and go back a couple of slides to the reporting up? One when I had reporting up on it. Could you one more time help me understand just a little bit more what that means?
We realize that our departments have various reporting entities, regulatory authorities, to whom they need to report on a regular basis, or who may come in and do what they term routine audits. Now, these aren't necessarily compliance audits or looking to find negative findings, but these things happen routinely. However, on occasion, we know that there could be significant findings, and oftentimes these things are managed at the department level, but we as an organization don't have that knowledge. And so what we're looking to do is to encourage departments to report that up on a more routine basis to the county administrator so that we can begin to look to see if there are any themes in terms of areas of concern or any recurring findings that come about where if we need to change a practice or institute a new practice or whatever that will inform countywide, then we have the background knowledge to give us guidance to do that.
So I don't want to assume, if I may just follow up. I think I heard that part. So does that then mean that it will also include the need, if that arises, for reporting to this body as well? That reporting up includes the legislature?
Well, at this point, if there is a
right
a highly significant audit issue for us, mm-hmm. you are already made aware of that.
Thank you.
Anything else? Paula, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thanks to the committee.
Let's suspend while we put the screens up. And you want these turned in, right, Paula?
Yes, please. If you would sign them and just pass them up the front there, and I'll pick them up. Thank you.
Are there resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Peter Stein.
Yes. I would like to add.
Use the microphone, please.
Where is it? Oh, there it is.
In your packets is a resolution number K, ID 6178. This is the city-county law enforcement consolidation study, and I'd like to add that to the agenda. And
is there a second? Seconded by Martha. All in favor of adding to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Discussion on that, please?
I suppose so, if you need to.
Yeah. I have a question about...
This is adding it to the agenda.
Sorry. This is the shared services, police, sheriff?
City, county, yes.
Okay. So I have a question about why it wasn't on our agenda. Was this passed at the committee meeting?
Yes. Joe?
I messed up. It was passed at committee meeting. I was to get it into the minute track system, and it didn't get into the minute track system. So that's the only reason why it's not on the agenda.
Okay.
It did pass committee.
And I have some concerns about added, not about doing this, about applying, but about doing it in any way allows it to be perceived as something we were sneaking past
discussion
the public.
Discussion out of order until...
No, this has to do
I think it's a reasonable discussion on the fact that we're adding
it. So what I want to know...
to talk about the issue, we'll wait until...
Yeah, I support the application, but I'm not really doing it this way, because my concern is that there are a lot of people from the public came and spoke to us at committee, public safety, last year when this idea came up. And they had concerns, and they wanted to be able to weigh in before we sort of defined what was going to happen.
Right.
So I just want to know, could we put this off till our next meeting and actually have it on the agenda so they'd have the opportunity to come and speak to us?
Well, I think that comes up at the... when we actually talk about this, if it gets added to the agenda. I'd like to
get an answer to the question.
Well, I think that question is properly put when we're actually talking about that if you want to move to postpone or whatever else, when we're actually talking about the resolution. We haven't even added it to the agenda at this point.
I guess I'm asking if it would be okay to just wait till next time, whether we could still submit it if we waited and just
been moved and seconded at this point. All those in favor of adding to the agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have two opposed. Three opposed. That is added to the agenda. And we'll come back to this, and we'll talk all about it when we get down to it. Anything else to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's go to consent agenda. There's some advisory board appointments. I'll read them. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Home Ownership Oversight Committee, Martha Robertson.
Can I ask that be separated from the others?
Sure. You want to pull that one off? Is that the one you want to recuse on?
Yeah, I need to recuse myself from that.
Okay, we'll pull that one off then. To the Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board, Dave McKenna. To the Soil and Water Conservation District, Jim Dennis, David McKenna, Alan Teeter. To the Planning Advisory Board, Martha Robertson. To the Water Resources Council, Dooley Kiefer. To the Environmental Management Council, Roy Luft. To the Planning Advisory Board, with the terms ending December 31, 2018, Sue Cosentini, Kathy Slaughter, Darby Kiley, and Gay Nicholson, and term expiring December 31, 2017, Andrew Zepp. Out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Anna Kellis. We have some resolutions on the consent agenda. If you want to talk about them, just say off. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, Acceptance of Disability Resource Program Funding, Tompkins County Workforce, that's off. Resolution B, Authorizing New York State Department of Transportation Master Mass Transportation Capital Construction Project, Supplemental Agreement Number 3, Ithaca Commons. Resolution C, urging New York State to provide technical and financial assistance to assist counties in complying with federal child care law changes so that local child care slots are not lost due to increased costs of meeting new federal mandates. That's ID 6155. Out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, we have Resolution D.
Off.
That's off. Okay, on the consent agenda, do I have a motion? Motion by Carol, seconded by Peter. All in favor of the consent agenda? Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's go and pick up for some of our staff people.
Wait, so Mike, on the appointment to the Home Ownership Oversight Committee, I just thought for consistency, since it's been an issue in the past, that I should recuse myself from that. I don't mean to to have you delay the vote.
Okay, can we vote on it? Why don't we just go ahead and vote on that and let Carol recuse? And that was
Home Ownership.
That was Martha Robertson to the Home Ownership Oversight Committee. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, those who are abstaining, we have one abstention. Let's go to the Planning Department and take the Resolution I. Martha?
Okay, thank you. Let me get there. Packet page 29. Thank you. Making a negative determination of environmental significance in relations, resolution number, whatever the next one is.
J.
J of 2016. Appropriating funds from the capital reserve that should be fund for natural, scenic, and recreational resource protection for the acquisition of the Six Mile Creek Midline Road property, ID 6154.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the negative declaration. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Can we go to J?
More pages beyond.
30.
Why was that? Okay. Got stuck together. Sorry. Appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection for the acquisition of the 6 Mile Midline Road property, ID 6153. So moved.
We need a second from Carol. This is a short form roll call. Any discussion on this? Carol?
I just want to thank all the staff and other people who worked on this and just point people's attention to packet page 32, to the project eligibility and project priority criteria that talks about, you know, exactly what we're looking for in this program, and then the particular application that goes from pages 34 to 36 in the maps. In the next two pages, 38, showing this is just a model application showing the extreme value of this particular acquisition along the 6 Mile Creek corridor and the high standards that we set before we do allocate money to preservation of public land. And so thank you to staff, and I certainly support this.
Ready to vote on this? Let's do the short form roll call.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Is there anyone who wants to be recorded as voting no? That's unanimous. Thank you, Martha. We'll come back to your report.
Okay.
Let's go. I'm sorry?
Resolution A.
I'm sorry, Martha. You got another resolution?
Yeah, I don't know whether anybody's here for it, but Resolution A, Acceptance of Disability Resource Program Funding, Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board, ID 6162.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim. Any discussion on this one?
Yeah,
someone pulled it. Dooley?
I did. I'm looking for it.
Page 5.
The question I had arose from the memo that's attached to the resolution, which indicates the funding was for 2015. But I got the impression from reading the resolution that it's for 2016, and I left a message for Julia Maddock, and I never heard back.
Yes,
so I don't know.
I was going to address this in my report. rather than pull it. So it is 2015 money. This was an allocation that should have gone into the 2015 budget, and this is essentially correcting an oversight. It is funding for the 2015, as the memo says. This has been funded since 2004, and the workforce investment expects this to continue. They feel it has been kind of year to year for a while, but they're starting to feel like this is actually kind of stable funding and to be expected again.
So if I'm looking at line 18 of the resolution, would it be more accurate to say whereas this 2015 funding has been used to provide the service? Maybe Rick could say whether that's accurate.
It is accurate, and I confirmed with Julie also that this was for 2015.
So if we could just make it clear in the resolution, that would be great, Martha.
Is that friendly?
Of course.
Friendly to the seconder?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Can we proceed to a vote on this, or is there more discussion? All those in Carol?
No, I just thought maybe is available.
Please.
Okay.
All in favor of the amendment or of the resolution with the friendly amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you again, Martha. We'll come back.
Sure.
Let's go to Dave McKenna. Dave, let's see if we can do Resolution G, please.
Okay. Resolution G, document ID 6173, authorization to appropriate, and I'm going to correct the number to $163,729 from the Highway Fund balance to amend the capital program, increasing the project cost and award of bid Pine Tree Road bike and pedestrian trails, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha.
Dave, will you restate the amount you changed?
The original amount was $188,729, but Cornell has put in another $25,000, so our cost would be $163,729.
Thank you.
Dave, I guess that leads me a question. Didn't we have to use the full amount, even with the 25 in the amendment of the budget? Maybe we don't.
I'm not sure.
Rick or Joe?
Yeah, I think we've got revised numbers in here. So the total amount of the project is up by the 188. And then where the money comes from is explained within the resolution. 163 will come from the county as proposed. The other 25 would come from Cornell.
Do we change the amount in the title as David proposed?
To 163.
It should be changed in the title to reflect the 163.
Yeah, okay. I have a markup.
Dave, you're absolutely right. I just was a little confused myself. Thank you. Okay. All right, let's open this up. Was there a second for that? Did we get a second?
All right. Martha.
Let's have discussion, please. Dooley.
Well, this has been hanging around a very long time. When it originally was proposed using multimodal funds, there was a certain attraction. As things have developed, it has gotten more and more expensive. The land where the trail might have gone was put off limits by Cornell, which added to the cost. The commute to Cornell will be significantly improved by this. I guess I have come to view it mainly as a project that benefits Cornell and doesn't benefit everybody along the road. So I can't in good conscience say the county should spend any more money on this. I will be voting no.
Martha?
I want to make sure people understand, anybody listening understands that Cornell right now with this additional $25,000, that's in addition to the $400,000 they're committing. So it's $425,000 out of a project of a little more than $2 million. So they're paying 20.3% Tompkins County in total will be paying 18.9% of this project. So we're paying less than 19% of a more than $2 million project. We have federal and state money in about $1.2 million committed. The town has agreed to put in $70,000 and to maintain the trail forever. So we're getting a whole lot of bang for our buck, and I honestly just simply do not understand the idea that Cornell is different from, you know, the people who work at Cornell. Those are our constituents. Those are our taxpayers. They need to live somewhere. They need to walk or bike or drive to get to work. I feel very strongly about this investment as a multimodal effort to make it possible for people to get out of their cars as much as possible. We have made many commitments to a trails program, and this is one where we're going to see people actively deciding to bike, to walk, to run, and between Cornell and their housing and the business area right there, this is one of those trails, one of those links that's going to be critical. It also will enable people to get all the way out to Freeville once we get that trail finished. So this is a key link. It's a decades-long investment. It's a matter of safety. It's a matter of sustainability, because if we can talk all we want about trying to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions for transportation, but if we don't make it safe, accessible, and user-friendly, we will never reduce our greenhouse gas emissions on transportation. This is a terrific investment, a very thoughtful project, and I'm sure people are going to use it a lot, and we're only paying less than 19% of the project cost.
Let me tell you the list. I've got Peter, Dave, Jim, Mike, Anna. Peter?
I will vote against this project. It's been going on as long as I've been a member here, and I've certainly looked into it and watched it change, worried about the problems, the dangers of people walking through that underpass, but I think there's almost no one who's second to me about getting out of my car and walking. I walk every day from Cornell to where I live. It's about 2.5 miles, 3 miles up, and on most days I walk back also. And it's great for your health, and I think it's benefited me physically, and I wish a lot of people would do it. But that doesn't mean I'm willing to do that every place and on paths that I think are not going to be used to the extent that people think they are. I'd also like to point out about making it safe to walk from that place to the other. And at the time I once investigated this, there has never been recorded an accident of any sort through that underpass underneath the railroad track. Now, my constituents live on Pine Tree Road, beyond this project, up until Route 79. They are, to a person, very angry about the total amount of traffic that has happened over the times that they have been living there. The traffic gets greater all the time, and their concern is that when we make it easier for cars to drive around there, that will increase the traffic. I'm not positive that that's true, but I think it's a real concern. And I have tried working with the Highway Department to try to get some way that the really difficult position they're in when they have to cross the street to go out and get their cars, and during the working hours there's just a continual stream of traffic back and forth on that part of the road. And we have not been able to do anything about that. We have not been able to look for money for widening that road or changing the routes or so forth. And it is as bad as it ever was and probably gets better. It gets worse all the time. For those reasons, I am not convinced that there's going to be that great amount of walking that's done. I've looked at it and compared it to the number of people that I see walking along the very easily walkable tracks through sidewalks through Cayuga Heights, where there's very little walking, and I think there'll be a whole lot less walking than there is at that point. So those are my reasons for voting against it. I have no anger against Cornell in it. I think Cornell has made certainly a reasonable contribution to what is actually their project. But nonetheless, I don't think I can back away from the concerns of people on the southern side of Pine Tree Road.
Dave McKenna.
Thank you. I would just want to say that Cornell has a little more in it than $425,000. Okay. There's a matter of easements that we are not having to pay for, and there's also other infrastructure that they've done on their own projects that would have been part of this project had that not happened at Cornell. And with the intended expansion up in that area, in the East Hill area, I think safety will become an increased concern, and I believe there will be more people walking or riding bikes, and if they'll have to go through that narrow section under the bridge, just that many more cars and that many more people, I just think it's going to be another safety concern. So I'm going to support the project.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I'll use some words I heard once in a wonderful movie: you build it, they will come. And I believe that every trail that we've had anything to do with in Tompkins County since I've been here, people have used, and people have called for being done. I think this helps the town of Ithaca, what they're trying to do. It clearly has an effect on the on Cornell in a positive sort of way. And I'm troubled to hear that the residents of Pine Tree Road are looking for a solution to the road. I believe we had a project years ago to improve that road, and that kind of went away, and because of NIMBY things that happened during that time. And, you know, until the highway system around Tompkins County gets improved, and that would be Route 79, and there's another way to get from that area to the university, that's the only road I can see that they can use, people coming and going into the community. It's an easy yes vote, given the fact that there's so much returning money for such a small expenditure on the part of the county, and a significant amount of money from the university. And what I would finally ask is that this be a roll call vote when we hopefully get to it.
It will be. Mike Sigler.
I mean, frankly, Martha and Jim have pretty much summed everything else I want to say, except for the simple fact that, you know, I used to drive through there a lot, and, I mean, it's unsafe now, I think. I mean, it's very hard to see there, and I was backing this before any of this happened. I just want to say I don't see that area ever getting safer than it is now, and this project's never going to get cheaper. I mean, think of everything that went into getting the groups together just to put this in place now, and I thank you for bringing the numbers. I mean, that's amazing. 19% we're paying, we're never going to get that again. I mean, this is it. So, I mean, if you ever want this project done, this is kind of like the time to strike, it seems. So,
Anna Kellis.
And I appreciate also the numbers. Thank you very much. I wanted to add that. The one thing, well, two things. One, I wanted to add, I guess, directly to Peter. I think the thing that I keep hearing is that people aren't going to use this one piece, and therefore that's not justified. I think others have stated that as well. But my understanding is that this is supposedly a section of a larger vision to create connectivity. We remove any one of the sections and we ruin the entire concept of getting people out of their cars and able to safely walk from long distances away. So if we myopically focus on this one piece and say people won't use this one piece, therefore we break the entire chain, I think that's short-sighted. So, you know, I just wanted to address that. The other was a quick question. I just now am seeing this piece about the concern for bikes leaving the path and that being risky or dangerous. So this is a question for, I guess, for Joe, maybe. Are we in the project, have we outlined enough street signage for bikes leaving the path and entering back onto the roads? Or
I may defer to Jeff on this.
Jeff Smith is our director of our highway department. No, it got turned off, I think.
No?
Yes. Yeah, you're all right.
All right, you can hear me. Abe Strock, I think is his last name, was at the committee meeting earlier today. He brought that concern. I have exchanged several emails with Abe. I agree with some of what his concerns are, and to try and bring everybody up to that thought process was that people leaving an improved path area, cycling along, at the termination of the project or the project limit, you're now back onto the old antiquated infrastructure that doesn't have a path. And through some of the exchanges of emails with him, and then today I also talked with him, is that I understand that the inability is obvious to be able to try and incorporate and expand the scope of this project because it's always been in such financial constraints. But I've talked to him, and we're going to look at those areas with some in-house people and also probably coordination with some Cornell people and probably through some, you know, lower funds like maintenance funds that I can utilize out of this year's budget, we can look into some additional signage, possibly some growth in the striping, some obvious improvements to striping to delineate those areas until further improvements in connectivity can be made to East Hill.
Great. That was my only concern, so thank you.
Are we ready to vote? Carol?
I had my hand up, too. Thank you. Sure. I wanted to just address a couple of the points that were raised. Peter, first I just want to say that along this road, I drive it several times a week, and there are a lot of people who walk and a lot of people who bike along there. Just a few weeks ago, I picked up a young woman. It was after 5 o'clock. She was running. She was rushing from Cornell to East Hill Plaza to get from her full-time job at Cornell to catch a bus to, I think it was Watkins, somewhere where she had a second job. And she runs that route every day to go from one bus to the next or to from her one job to the other. I see people I know walking along that route. I've also seen several accidents. I don't know if they rose to the level of ones that were reported on your lists that you looked at, but I have personally witnessed accidents there or the aftermath of accidents. And then I don't think that the traffic calming that's needed, three-quarters of a mile away, should be mutually exclusive to this. I think that there ought to be something done, and when our staff has time, we ought to be looking for other ways to deal with that. And then I wanted to say a word about the parcel, because I was, I chaired F&I back when we looked at, I think we have 7 or 8 or different potential routings of this path. And it's a very difficult parcel because of the terrain. And I was one of the people calling most vocally, Dooley, for a route that would go further in and use the terrain when Cornell came to us and said, that just really doesn't work for our site, I took another look at it. It's really a site. It's shaped almost like the state of New York. It's very wide on one end and comes very narrow to a point at the corner of Maple Avenue and Route 366. So that if, and the terrain is then steep down and a little bit back up, so that if you try to follow the terrain, it literally goes across the middle of the parcel from what would be equivalent to maybe Orange County all the way out across the rest of the state. So it really would have made it unusable for the university to put a future building there or to use it for anything else. So, you know, maybe there'll be another route there as they, you know, have a future project, then you can avoid the terrain. But I that's going to long enough down the road that I don't know that that's going to happen. And I hope you'll reconsider because of that, because I understand that was one of your main objections. The fact that they've put in far additional money than they originally said that they would do, and that the $1.2 million or most of it will essentially go off the table if we don't do this now. And lastly, I thought Martha made a really eloquent case. We really do need to get serious about getting people out of cars, particularly there. It is a population center already, people traveling to the rear part of the university there, and it's going to be an even larger population center in the coming years. So I think it's the right time. It's the right place. Let's just do it.
Leslin, wrap us up and then let's vote.
Good. Thank you. Carol, actually, thank you for your thoughts on this because I echo a lot of what you say. And just thinking of the number of people who use this particular path as their way of getting around. We're looking at units of housing in that area in terms of population center that will accommodate people who are low to moderate income and don't necessarily have cars. And I think that is a very important consideration for me, not to mention this bad boy has been at my doorstep when I chaired F&I and then yours, and then I don't know who else has been around for a while. I remember when I think it was $734,000 to do the whole doggone thing. I also do appreciate when we did look at moving it out and the terrain making it extremely difficult for something that would allow for proper handicap accessibility. And so for me, it is also a good seller that this is in here. I know I was a holdout and like this has to happen. We have to make it handicap accessible. And I'm thankful to see this. So I'm hoping that my colleagues will take those things into consideration, and particularly for people who are going to be moving into those areas, who already live there, but who are going to be moving into those areas who are low to moderate income, use this as a gateway to get from A to B as well, that we take their safety and their lives into consideration and vote to support this project moving forward.
Okay, can we vote? The clerk will call the roll, please.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
Having achieved 10 votes, that is agreed to. Okay, let's go on to...
thank you, everyone.
I'm not sharing yet. This bad boy is not coming back, right, Jeff? It's getting done.
We're on the standing committees and see if we can get through some of these. Charter Review Committee, Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Oh, right. Thank you, Mike. We met a week ago today. And we discussed the role of the county historian now and possibly in the future. That was an interesting discussion. We discussed the reapportionment section of the charter and how best to implement our preference for having an independent commission, what is legal for us to do, that needs further checking. We discussed the appropriate role for the Community Mental Health Services Board, and that needs more discussion. And we dealt with the dissolution of the Public Works Department, where the four different divisions, two of which are enterprise, will each become departments, which will give our county administrator even more departments to oversee. And just for your information, the Solid Waste Division will become the Department of Recycling and Materials Management. It has a new name. So we will continue this discussion this month.
Questions for Dooley. Will.
Dooley, can you say just a little more about the questions related to the Community Mental Health Services Board and what was unclear, what turned their role?
Well, there was proposed language to change our language in the charter. And what we haven't heard from as a committee is a representative of that board. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dooley.
Joe's making faces. You got something to add?
Well, only that it was, I think it relates to their role in the appointment of a commissioner. So that was really the focus. It wasn't a more general issue about roles and responsibilities. It was very focused on what the role should be.
There was sort of an ambiguity in the previous language.
The existing language is not clear. That's right.
Thank you very much.
Jim?
I noticed Ed is still here. And are you here for the Community Arts Partnership grant thing? That got pulled from the agenda, from the consent.
I'm sorry.
And it would make sense that we might want to send Ed home with a yes vote.
Sure. Dooley, are you done with your report?
Sure.
Okay. Leslin?
I had a question for Dooley, only because I can hear you. So the discussion around the departments, that's going to continue. That's not a done deal. Did I hear you? The Department of Public Works.
No, the restructuring pretty much has taken place.
Uh-huh.
One of the questions I had, and I had not yet had a chance to talk with Jeff Smith about, is the potential naming of the Highway Department, whether he would consider the Department of Roads and Bridges a more appropriate name, and he just told me tonight that would be fine. So that's that kind of level of discussion is still going on. But the dissolution of the Public Works Department has been decided on.
So I'm sorry, somewhere I'm in the cloud and did not know that. So might I just get what are now going to be the departments? There's Highway, and then
airport or aviation. Uh-huh. Its name is also being discussed. I mentioned solid waste, which has a new name.
Can you say the name, Jim?
Recycling and materials management.
Who's the fourth?
I'm forgetting. What
facilities.
Facilities. And
if I could interject, please. What Dooley, I think, is describing is what the committee is putting into the draft. It's all got to come to this legislature.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have authority. Only the legislature has the authority to establish a department.
I appreciate that, because I heard the restructuring has already been done, and that's what I was trying to clarify.
Did I miss a vote somewhere? It's been done in the committee.
The committee has spent it's not enough time on it, yes.
Thank you, my dear.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Anna?
Just a quick question for clarification. The Public Works Department is being dissolved, or the name is being changed? I didn't understand that.
It's being done away with and replaced by four additional departments.
Which is the transportation?
They used to be divisions.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Martha?
Yeah, it's years ago. We had a commissioner of Public Works.
Years ago.
Who had
many, many
those years. Four departments. And so it was just structured differently than our other departments. So this charter change is just recognizing the way we've been doing business for at least 10 years or so, since for a very long time.
Okay. Thanks again, Julie. All right, Jim, you're next up anyway. Why don't we go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, and then you certainly can take your resolutions.
All right. I have Resolution E, adjustments to the 2016 budget, the municipal sales tax distribution agreement, and I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Then we need to do D.
Okay. The Resolution D, which is the award of 2016 grants for arts and cultural organization development community arts partnership. And so that it doesn't drag on too long, duly
let's see if we
put
get a
out,
second. Just a second.
I will
seconded
move that.
Seconded by Glenn.
And
go ahead.
So that it doesn't drag on forever, Dooley wrote another resolution that changed sixth whereas, added the word the, deleted the word or the letter A or word A, added 2,173 between the word recommended and budget, and I will accept that, just with much pain and trepidation, but I will do that.
Glenn is nodding yes to the seconder. All right, with that change, are there any other? Julie, that was pulled by you. Was there?
I pulled it because of that,
things?
And the language was approved by Tom Knight. I checked what it meant. That's where it came.
It really doesn't matter.
So thank
okay.
you, Jim.
All right, so we're there. We're ready to vote on this one. Mm-hmm. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Mm-hmm. That's unanimous.
Have a good night.
All right. Thank you. One thing. I've noticed emails coming out from Kevin McGuire about the setting up of the meeting in April, at the end of April, and the retreat, the budget retreat. And it came to my attention that we've been a little lax in responding to that. So I would hope that people can respond to the variety of days that Kevin has offered up for the last week of April. And I don't think there's anything else. That pretty much concludes my report.
Questions, Anna?
Just one question on that. I know that it's not absolutely required that everybody be there, but as my first year, I would absolutely love to be there, and I don't know if it's a conversation that people have. I'm out of the country one week out of the last 15 years, and it happens to be that one week. So I don't know if I'm just putting it out there. I did fill it out and said that I was not available, and I just want it to be out there that I'd love
all
to be there.
Well, we will not hold that against you.
Well,
and
if it can be changed.
Congratulations, you're leaving the country for a week.
Carol?
Yeah, so thank you for coming up with some additional dates, Jim. I also did note that they are all in the same week. It's the last week of April, so if it's possible to offer any dates, there are, I think, five different times offered. If any of the five could be the week before or the week after, it might garner some additional responses.
Not a Friday night. It was on the poll.
Come on.
No, there was a poll. There was a Friday night on the poll. Like,
any dates?
And I could come.
A
you want
single
to do a Friday night?
Early.
I concur with
breath,
you,
folks.
Carol.
Let's move on.
No commitment here.
All right.
Any hours?
Jim, are any more questions for Jim? Jim, thank you for your report. Oh, I did have a question for you.
Sure.
How are we doing on getting prepared for the evaluations of the direct reports?
I've had several conversations with Steve Estes, and he is preparing some. I've asked him to look at
the computerized versions so that we can send them out. And the next committee meeting, he was going to have those ready for us and to take a look at it. And I think it's the simplest way. It's the least amount of work on the part of the personnel department, and it will probably achieve the same goals that you all want to achieve. The history of all this has been done a few times over the last 10 years, and there are enormous amounts of paper, many trees that were cut down for these things, and they seem to be collecting dust places. So, and an enormous amount of work on the part of personnel department to generate all this. So I'm looking for a better way to do this.
Thank you, Jim. Carol?
So this is back on the budget retreat. So the email, I wondered if people's email was going to recognize this because the request came from Janica Moskal.
Right.
And, my email almost skipped it because I don't get a lot of emails from her.
I just checked, and I did not get it at all. So
there was some question here.
Well, we all know who Janica is, right? Do we all know who Janica is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't get the email, and I just checked.
Joe, could that be resent?
Sure can.
Thank you.
I will promise you we will have it out within 24 hours.
Okay. Can we move on? It's time for break. Before we go to the next committee, let's take 10 minutes. Let's continue with our standing reports. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. WDIC met last week, Wednesday. We had a very good meeting. And talk about what our work plan is for the upcoming year. We had some, we're thankful to Anna for being willing to join the committee. Some of the things that we are looking to accomplish this coming year is along with our personnel department. We've been working hard on this as a complete development and rollout of an employee recognition program, an award program, the Strength and Diversity Award that we hope this legislature will give out, similar to the Distinguished Youth Award, for people who are doing a great work to foster and continue to build diversity and inclusion, particularly inclusion, not just within county government, but within our county as a whole. We are looking to complete our diversity plan, and that's why it was interesting to see the compliance report from Paul and some of the things they have in the works, because part of our plan does include taking a look at where we could and should be going in terms of MWBEs. We already have in play our LEP, so, and as well as ADA compliance policies. We are continuing our work with the personnel department to complete and publish the reasonable accommodation commitment statement and information. That's been on our list of things. We do want to recruit more of our regular frontline employees to serve in the committee. The personnel department has been working with a number of other managers and others to come up with a employee development training series. And so WDIC is one of the things that's been on our agenda that we've been asking of our personnel department, and we're glad to see things moving forward with that. Another thing on our agenda for this year is to work with our personnel department again to develop a sustainable plan of action for recruitment and relationship building so that we are able to attract really broad, diverse candidates for most of our jobs, and there's been good conversation around what that would look like. We're also interested in the diversity of our boards and commissions is an area we don't necessarily look at. And so that is something that we are taking on
Sort of beginning with looking at our application as well, the application that goes out when people are applying for to be on our boards and commissions. Does that include anything around diversity and inclusion and what people might bring to the board of or commission in that arena? So there's a lot of work that we're moving on. A small committee of us will continue to work on the diversity plan. That is a little bit more concrete day-to-day things to be doing or month-to-month things to be doing that will be in compliance with our diversity policy. So that was some of the discussion we had at our committee meeting and the things that we are moving forward, moving on. The reading and discussion program is moving forward. So I think we're still recruiting for individuals to participate in that. So if any one of you is interested, it might not be too late to sign up, I don't think. And we are also talking about another way of bringing more discussion within county government around diversity and inclusion in our county as a whole through videos. We start our year at WDIC with just looking at a video to remind us of why we do what we do. And it's usually very short, most of the times 10 minutes or less, video that provokes our thinking and gets us primed for continuing this work. And so we're looking to sort of amass a series of short videos like that departments can use for discussions within the department. It is our hope and expectation, we talked about this as well, that diversity and inclusion becomes a regular part of the conversation. So in everybody's department meeting agenda should be a line that says diversity and inclusion, what have we been doing, what have we done, where are we lacking, et cetera. So it just becomes a natural form, a natural part of our conversation and our way of doing rather than always looking back. So that's one of the things that we are recommending and hoping will move forward. So that's it for our report, and we meet again on the fourth Wednesday, whatever fourth Wednesday it is here in March, in the old jail conference room. There.
Good. Questions for Leslie? Anna?
Just a quick question of where those videos would be housed. Is there a possibility of having them, Joe, or have you talked or brainstormed about having them on the county website as a...
It probably could be. We did talk about where they can be located, can be easily accessed, et cetera. So we did talk about some of that.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to the old library committee. It has not met, so that's easy. I'll go to the public safety committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yes, I have nothing to report, although we have a resolution here, and it's resolution F, appropriation from the general fund balance replacement pay. There's an error which I'd like to correct. I don't have the thing in front of me, but there's the word officer should be plural, should be officers.
Corrections officers, right?
Corrections officers, okay. And so I'll move this resolution.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, takes a short roll call vote. Sorry.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Does anyone want to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous. Peter, I think you have the resolution you added as well.
Right. I do have a resolution. It's added. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. This resolution was passed by the committee. And
your microphone, Peter.
What?
Please
close
use your mic,
mic,
Peter.
Aren't I? Oh, it's the wrong thing. Sorry. I was talking into my ear or something like that. So this resolution was passed by public safety. And it is my understanding that it must be passed today or else it doesn't work, okay? Joe knows more about this than I do, and I'd like to pass on to him if he has anything to say about this.
Can you move the resolution first?
I'll move it, yes.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Joe, do you want to speak?
I can. And let me start with responding to the question that Carol asked when we were in an earlier part of the agenda. We're under time pressure here, and again, it was really my fault that this didn't get onto your regular agenda. It just didn't get into the IQM2, the Minitrack system, and that's on us. The reason it needs to move forward tonight is when you next meet on March 15th, your meeting begins a couple hours after the deadline for submitting these applications. So it's the typical new state process where it really moves along quickly, the application process. So the deadline is March 15th, end of business. So that's why it needs to happen in this cycle. With respect to the resolution that's in front of you tonight, a part of it should look very familiar because most of the whereases came from the resolution that you passed a few months ago that gave us the authority to start working on an application for the grant. So it's very familiar language. In that original resolution, it said that we would come back to you for you to authorize us to actually submit the application. And that's what we're doing tonight. The application itself is a little bit different than what we're accustomed to. The Department of State is managing this process. They call the application a project charter. Project charter is a very compact summary of what you'd like to do with the money that they could make available. Expected savings, a very summary statement of what you have in mind, and that's how we begin the process. So we've given you the first draft of the project charter, and it's in your packet, and we reviewed that at committee. Now, that is going to be polished over the next few days. In fact, the Department of State is in town tomorrow. They're bringing a group of five people who will do what they call a clinic for the technicians who are going to be working on this application. And they will help us make sure that we conform to what they want. So by the time we finish the process, the first draft that you see will be polished up, tightened up, but it won't be substantially different, I don't believe, than what you have in the packet tonight, because it's, again, just a summary concept of what we have in mind. To the point of what will be in the are we binding ourselves to any particular course of action in this application? In fact, we're not. We're only binding ourselves to go after money that will pay for a study that will look at the full range of options available to us. And when you look in the project charter, and I had it flagged on the first page toward the bottom in the project description, I think it makes it clear even in this draft, where it talks about how the participants believe that efficiency-based savings can be produced through organizational realignments that may range from the consolidation of certain functions. And that could be any discrete function within those organizations. Records, for example, could range from that to a full establishment of a single police agency. So what we're saying to the state there is we want to look at the full gamut of options available to us, shared services all the way to a full consolidation. That's what we expect to come of this study. So I know there was a concern expressed early on, and we tried to speak to it then, that we're not saying this is a study of consolidation. This is a study of the full range of shared service options that are in front of us. So our goal tonight is to ask the legislature to give us the authority to keep working on this application and to get it in by that March 15th deadline that the state has set for submissions of these applications. There's a second part of the resolution that speaks to the RFP process, and it would also give us the okay to proceed with the RFP. So if the funding hunt is successful, we could proceed with the RFP. There, I think we understand that this is a big one. This is an important one. And we would come back to the legislature for you to review the RFP before it went out. And we have normal procedures for that to happen.
So often we will go to the committee, the program committee, and review the RFP with the program committee and ask the committee, because it's a committee call, do you want this to go to the full legislature? Were you comfortable with it just being reported out of committee, the committee decision? So my expectation would be we would go through that normal RFP protocol to make sure that before it hit the streets, the legislature was familiar with what was in that RFP. So again, for tonight, the resolution would allow us to go forward with the application, substantial compliance with what you see, understanding there'll be some tightening up. And then with respect to the section that relates to the RFP, again, I clearly understand that we would want to share that document with you before it hit the streets.
Martha.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Joe. So we're writing this kind of with the city, with Ari Levine.
Correct.
So does city council have to approve the same RFP that we do? And,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And is there, you know, they've got to hurry up and apply. Is there a deadline? When do we expect to hear back?
I'll tell you that at the end of tomorrow. I'm not sure when they will get back to us on this. Yeah.
Okay. And assuming we get the money, is there a specific, do you know if there's a specific timeline, time frame for getting the work done?
I think our expectation, and I think there's a timeline in here, but it's, I know that we were expecting something like a year for this to run its course.
Okay. All right. And then just one other thing. So you said five people from the city or from the state are coming?
Yeah.
Five, to help us talk about efficiencies?
We took it to be a good sign that they're interested in what we're talking about here.
They're also going to Martha, they're also going to both Chemung County and Broome County that are also looking at the same kind of police efficiency consolidation effort that we're looking at. And I also heard that Warren, I don't know if they're going there, but Warren County is also looking at that.
If I could say one more thing, and I've probably spoken too much. There are several other partners in this now. So we've received letters of interest from the village of Dryden, from the village of Cayuga Heights, the village of Groton, not Trumansburg yet. Cornell is interested in participating. They can't be a money participant. There can't be grant money for entities that aren't municipalities, but Cornell will be participating. All of those partners are expected to be at the clinic with the Department of State tomorrow. So there is a good level of interest locally in this.
Thank you.
I've got Carol, then Peter, then Dooley.
So the technicians that you referred to are the people from the state? Or do we have our own technicians as well?
Do we have technicians? If I'm a technician, then yes, I'm one. So in our group, I'll be there, Jonathan, Paula, the sheriff, the undersheriff, and we've invited Peter Stein, too, to be, as chair of public safety, to be a legislative rep.
Are there any consultants involved at this point?
No.
Okay.
No.
And then what are the expected amount of dollars of this $200,000-plus... Was it 12 people's 10% to 20% of their time that'll be required here?
Well, the way the state sizes the grant is to look at our savings estimate. And so we've estimated, I think it's $450,000 a year, which would be a savings goal. So they look at that and they decide if that's reasonable. They then look at the 10-year impact of those savings and they present value it back. So they get a present value of those 10-year savings, and the maximum grant is 20% of that discounted present value of future savings. So if you do that, I think the total amount that we would be looking at here is in the mid-$600,000 range.
For the study?
For some of which would be in the study phase. By their own rules, not all of it can be in the study phase. But if you look at the project charter, you see that there would be direct costs for consultants, and this is complex stuff, so we need consultants. But we've also put in the project budget our own costs, so you can see an attribution of some of my time, Jonathan's time, Paula's time, and so forth. And so it's conceivable the grant could cover some of those in-kind contributions that we're making. The remainder of the grant would be available. Let's say that we found a course through the study and we decided to do certain things. The balance of the grant would be available for those implementation things, painting police cars, if you want to use that as an example. So it would be available for the implementation phase.
Well, my question was about the $200,000 of outlay for a government operations consultant right. and an outside legal advisor. Do we expect right. that all to be covered, or do
yes.
we have to let
yeah.
any of that out?
We would. Our goal is to have that fully covered.
Okay.
Yes.
And then I don't. Your mea culpa, notwithstanding, that's not what I was looking for. This was a public committee meeting, and. I don't know if at the committee you went back over. We had very specific questions and concerns from the public. I don't remember what any of them were, but I do remember that last year, as we were talking about the jail renovations and some of the other public safety matters that came up, there were members of the public from different sides who had different concerns that they started to raise, not necessarily saying we shouldn't study, but saying, you know, if you ever study, we want to make sure these kinds of questions are included. So if there wasn't any effort made to go back and look at the minutes from that or the notes from that to make sure that we are including those or that we're writing anything that in any way would later exclude those, because there were some things the committee hadn't thought of at the time. I just want to make sure that we're making this available. So I'm just wondering if there could be some kind of process between now and 2 weeks from now when this has to go in to do some public outreach, at least have an article saying, you know, we're doing this. If there are specific questions you want to make sure. I understand that the study itself will do that. But we often hear later, oh, that was beyond the scope of what we outlined originally. And so I just have some concerns that it doesn't quite make sense to me that somehow in the minutes or the, you know, that we didn't at least have an agenda page with a title with no materials yet to alert the public who might have wanted to come here tonight and say, please don't close out the possibility of studying X or Y. And since I'm not fluent enough in what the concerns are in this particular field, I can't remember what X or Y were, but there were some specific things. So I'm having a hard time with the notion of proceeding with this without that something happening of that accord. Is there anything you can offer?
Well, only that I'm sure Marsha will be writing this up, and it'll be part of what we post and what's out there for the media. This is sent to all media when she writes it up, so it's certainly going to be out there by tomorrow.
Is there a way you would phrase the question if there are things you want to get in early about? Again, not specific questions, but a realm of study that we should make sure to include to contact whoever it is?
I hope I'm not being dismissive, but I do think we'll have lots of time to scope this, that our focus right now is to get the application in that will allow the broadest possible study of this issue of the alignment of law enforcement in this county. I think what I heard most clearly when we talked about this before is make sure you don't close out options, and so this doesn't. And also, I think it's clear that there are good things going on in community relations within IPD and I'm sure elsewhere that people don't want to get lost if we move forward in any of these directions. So I think we're all really sensitive to that. And I think as this develops, that will be woven into it. So there will be lots of time for input about scope and how we proceed and the way we'll accept public input into it. But again, for the moment, I think our goal is to get an application into the state by March 15th and then work on those kinds of issues like specific scope.
Okay, here's what I have. I have Peter, Dooley, Anna, Jim, Mike. Peter?
I just wanted to make a simple remark. It was my impression that we have to, if we're going to go ahead with this thing, we have to have something written that we're at this meeting.
We need to get it approved tonight, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Dooley?
Thank you. I had put in your folders, I think, some changes that I have submitted for this resolution. I spoke with Joe today about some of them and will not attempt to characterize his reaction. So I'd like to go through them with you now and get a reaction from the mover. I can't remember who moved it.
I moved it.
Thank you.
Peter's motion.
So if you look at the fourth whereas, I have something in the first line that says a combined $16 million plus in their respective budgets. I think the word combined belongs there.
Excuse me, Dooley. May I say I am the mover, but I certainly was not the author. And
I think Joe was the author.
I think Joe is the author, and I would like to hand it off to him.
We still have to vote on it, though, Peter.
What? Yeah, we have to vote on it, but I'd like Joe to have
Dooley finish what she's proposing and see whether what reaction we have to it.
So the first one is the fourth whereas, where it says a combined $16 million, because I think the word combined belongs there. The next line says, or 28%. That you can forget about. Strike that. My conversation with Joe clarified that the 25% refer to the 2015 budget, the 28% that's in the attachment, the project document, is 2016 figures. So that's why there was a discrepancy. So forget that one. Two more whereases down. There is language struck through because I no longer think that this more accurately reflects the needs of the city and county residents alike. But as Joe already has pointed out, that language was lifted from a November resolution that we've already passed. So I can imagine that you all would want that to remain. I just no longer agree with it. I'm now going down three more whereases, because there I inserted the word SWAT to explain what that was, and also to add the fact that we have another cooperative thing already in place, which is the closest car concept, and I think that is a fact that belongs in this resolution. At the bottom of page one, there's the date of the resolution that we acted on earlier. And when we get to the resolves, that's where I tried to express my concerns with this process that Joe feels comfortable with because we have standard procedures. I think it's important that the draft come back to any legislators who are interested in it, or legislators, let them attend tomorrow that meeting and just observe what's going on. So that's why I put the draft attached instead of that included here, and including such amendments as may hereafter be agreed upon in discussions with the legislature, the city, state, and officials. I think we want to be involved as this goes along. And finally, in the second resolved, Carol, I had a concern somewhat similar to what you were talking about. I think it's when it comes time for the RFP to be released, we as a legislature should be involved in okaying that description, and it would be at that point that any members of the public could come in and also comment to us. So that's a very important change to me. And I can move each of these separately. I can ask the mover, who's Peter, who is deferred to Joe, your reaction to each one. I'm not sure how to proceed since you can't.
All right. I'd like to ask Joe to respond to the suggestions that have been made.
Joe?
He is not a legislator.
No, I know he's
well,
not.
Well, he can make a comment, and we can take it for that, because he is our administrator.
It would answer my question. It would alleviate my concerns, that last piece, and it would make it a lot easier for me to vote for it.
So the first thing is on page one, and it's moving the word combined to where
Mike, this is a...
Well, Peter's asked for Joe to comment if he wishes to, so I'm going to listen to Joe first.
Yeah, I'll go quickly for the markup. The word combined is fine. The whereas below, that's where you scratch the more accurately reflect, you're correct. The legislature's already approved that language, so you've talked about that. Mm-hmm. When we get to the
I would say if that comes out based on a friendly amendment, I will move to put it back in.
And I will second it.
It's in there because Joe took it completely out, so I've explained that already.
Let's let him make this comment, and then we'll come back to Peter.
The closest car concept, and I double-checked with Brian Robison when I came over here earlier, closest car concept really relates to the county and the state police department. So that's the closest car concept. If there is an emergency, if there is something that happens that is extreme, then we receive support from the city, from the villages, never from IC. I don't know that Cornell is in there at all, so I don't know that language will work here given the way the closest car system works. The addition of the date in the resolution, of course, is fine. As we get to the resolves, I guess the question I would have in the first resolve, in the additional language, it says if there's any amendment, it has to come back to the legislature for its approval. That creates that time bind where if there's a change and it has to come back to the legislature, the legislature has to agree upon it. I don't know how to work that timeline.
I don't think that's what it says.
Okay, and if I misunderstand, that's something the legislature can talk about. That was my concern. And then the last resolve, that's the one that relates to the RFPs. And since we do have the standard procedure on the RFPs where we do bring them to committee, the committee then decides whether to bring it to the full legislature or not, I would fall back to acting in accordance with normal legislative review protocols in that resolution. Again, I appreciate that the legislature is going to want to see this, that we have standard protocols. And to me, maybe that's language that could go in.
I'm not thinking that your amendments here, Dooley, are friendly. So I think if you want to make the amendments, you ought to move them.
Well, can I accept the ones that Joe has accepted to call them friendly so we can get a little bit closer to having it done? I'd like to do that.
Well, you're welcome. You can do that. Is that friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
I think, could you be clear? I don't know which ones those were.
It's the one on the first one where she added the word combined.
I think the mover needs to make this. I need...
Yeah, Joe, could you list the without any discussion, which ones you suggest that you are willing to accept?
Okay, understanding that the legislature has to accept it, not me.
Yes.
Okay. The word combined and the fourth whereas.
Oh, those two things are friendly, then? Those have been changed. Now the other.
And the resolution date.
On the bottom of page one.
And the 28% is no longer in there, correct? Okay.
Okay, so with those friendly amendments, Julie, if you want to make any other changes, please make a motion.
I will. Thank you. I'm going to look at the fourth whereas from the bottom of page one, where the word SWAT is inserted. And if what you weren't able to tell me today, you said you've now checked with Brian. So I'm sorry I didn't know that ahead of time. And also, along with the New York State Police, operate under a closest car concept and under, I guess you just said, and under emergency situations. Expect help from the other local departments. Is that what you said? Something like that? If you had been able to tell me, I would have made the wording fit.
Point of order,
that's
Mr.
What
Chairman.
I'm moving.
A point of order?
Yes, I think that the motion should be made and we should vote on it. And not have a discussion back and forth.
Well, what? All right.
Really?
Julie, are you going to move these as a package, or are you trying to move them one at a time?
I'll move them one at a time.
Okay.
And the one I was just discussing with Joe, I wanted to get straight what he wasn't able to tell me earlier today.
So what's your amendment?
And also, along with the New York State Police, operate under a closest car concept, and in emergency situations.
Is there a second to that amendment?
Receive help from the local police departments.
Is there a second to that amendment?
Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm moving.
I'm not seeing a second. Julie, go ahead and move your next amendment.
Point of order. I'm sorry, Mike. I want to just check in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whereas the language Julie crossed out, is that back in?
That's back in.
You're not... Got it.
Did we vote on that, or did Joe approve that?
No, that was... Please, let's try to get through this. Dooley, if you have another amendment, please move it.
So the first resolved on page 2. We're authorizing Joe, it says, to develop and submit to the Department of State a project charter substantially similar to the draft attached. That language seemed easier instead of saying that included herewith. And then the word with is extraneous. That's struck out. And then it says, any amendments as may hereafter be agreed upon in discussions with a bunch of people. The legislature being one of them. It's not saying it has to come back to us to get our agreement. It says, if we suggest something to you, you can
is there a second for that? Martha, discussion on this amendment duly put forth. Anna?
Just a question. So the original, if I understand, the original language included a list in the first resolve already. So my understanding is you were simply adding the one, right? Discussion with the city, state, and officials, and you're simply asking it to also be discussed with the legislature, but not approved. You're not saying approved. You're just simply adding us to the mix.
If we, inspired by this discussion tonight, make suggestions to Joe, which get discussed tomorrow at this technicians meeting, that can go in.
So, Joe, just a question then for you. If this is not about approval, this is not about voting, it's just adding us to the mix of people to discuss it with, is that acceptable?
I guess if I understand the words agreed upon, because usually when there's an agreement with the legislature, it's the body that makes that agreement. So that's my only question, how to interpret that.
So my
discussions are fine. It's just the agreement I need.
Okay. My instinct would be that it would be interpreted in the same way that it would be interpreted with the city, state, and officials, because it's added to the same list. So if it was separated, then I would think that it would be under question. But because it's one of several on the list, I feel more comfortable with that. But I don't. I guess I would be curious to see what the rest of the legislature.
On the amendment, Rich John.
As I read the amendments, it would require a special meeting. I think the intent may have been to say something to the effect of, through discussions with legislators, the city, state, and other officials. But as it's written, I would not support this because I don't think we're going to have a special meeting.
No.
Or we would stop the process.
Martha?
Yeah, I did not intend it to require a formal vote of the legislature. So that was the basis under which I seconded that.
If legislators instead of this legislature makes it clearer, that's fine with me.
I just wanted to put us on a par with city, state, and other municipal officials.
That was my intention.
Ready to vote on the amendment?
Well, is it legislature or legislators?
I take Rich John's comment at value.
Does legislators make a difference?
So what are you doing?
It's changing legislature to legislators.
so that they're individual, so it's just a discussion, putting them on
discussions
par.
With legislators.
And I would take out the word agreed. I'd say as may be developed through discussions with legislators, city officials.
And actually, adding the word the before city confuses the issue, Dooley, because you've made it the city, which is implies a vote of common council. So, boy, I really hate doing this. I really do. But so including such amendments as may be discussed with legislators, city, state, and officials of other participating municipalities.
Sounds good.
As may be discussed with legislators and city, state, and officials of other participating municipalities, which is not really graceful, but please, dear.
Julie, is that your amendment or not?
That sounds fine.
So, and it's obviously okay with Martha because she seconded it. Rick, Jim?
It does not facilitate another meeting, right?
Right. No meeting.
I'm still voting against it, but, you know.
All right, ready to vote. All those on this amendment, please in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 opposed. So we've got...
You know what? I'll change my vote. I'll support it.
Wait a minute. All right. Let's go again.
Indeed.
All those in favor of this amendment, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 All those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 That's 13. That's the right number, so it doesn't pass. It didn't get 8 votes. Dooley, do you have another amendment?
Oh, sure. In the final resolve, this deals with the RFP time. And there, I believe, a committee may say something should go on to the legislature, as Joe said, but a committee may equally well think, we know best, we don't have to send this to the legislature. And in my view, this is so important that it should have to come back to the legislature to okay the RFP as it goes out. And also, that would be a time when the public could weigh in. So my amendment is, as it's written, to be approved by the legislature before its release, and thereafter releasing and then acting upon, and that's back to the county administrator.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion? Carol?
Yeah, this would go a long ways towards alleviating my concern. And I think Joe is correct that where we have matters that come to committee first that aren't of this level of controversy, that, you know, we do ask the committees to weigh in first as to whether they, you know, would feel better about having something go to the full legislature. But I don't see anything about our process that prevents the whole legislature from saying this is important enough to us that we want to make sure it comes back to us, and it's that's in keeping with our process, existing process as well. So I will support this, and I'll urge others to do so.
On the amendment, Martha, then Will.
Is there an understanding or language that says Common Council will vote on the RFP?
I believe the council has passed a resolution similar to this that allows the RFP to be issued without further action by the council.
Okay, then I'm going to oppose this because if we can't trust our administrator to write up what we want after discussing with everybody, I mean, I don't know anybody better than Joe to identify what's needed. And this is just the RFP. This is not the plan. This is just the first step.
Well, we're back.
And I actually view this differently. I have nothing but the utmost respect for Joe, and I think he would bring us the very, very best. But I do think I would recall that, it was about a year or so ago, we had a very modest little expansion to our jail of 6 beds, and we had 100 people in this room because it touched on a lot of other issues. And I think it's reasonable given the larger climate of what is happening around law enforcement and the fact that this is a significant step toward restructuring, it's not the final step, but it's significant, and the RFP will define where we want to go. I think it's entirely process appropriate to bring it back to this body, give the public a chance. It's not a small point, so I will support this amendment.
Anna, on the amendment.
I think I remembered hearing this evening that people specifically spoke up saying that they would like to have some say on what exactly we ask during the study period, and that seems to be relevant to the RFP process. My only concern, Joe, would be that if you feel that having that process, allowing for the public to have input, would completely derail a timeline that would make it impossible, and that if you, I don't know if you suggested something, but if that, if it can still keep in a timeline and allow us to put the RFP out, then it, for the same reason, given that people would like some input on the study period and what we evaluate, I think it's worth an effort to get public engagement.
You want to speak to that?
Again, I think the normal, I think there is a normal protocol that we followed, and it's, this resolution really doesn't speak to that. But it really does leave the decision about legislative involvement to the legislature. So it would bring an RFP to the program committee. The program committee would decide whether the program committee is comfortable enough just to say, let's go, or whether it wants to refer it to the entire legislature. So it's really falling back to standard practice that is very much decided by the legislature itself in terms of how to proceed. So that's what I would envision doing here.
Right, but those meetings are not as publicly attended or publicized as a general meeting where we would allow and encourage the public comment period, I think, is the only distinction, even though they both technically allow it, right?
Right. Well, it would, if it came back to a committee, it would be posted on a public agenda, so it would be a public, you know, there would be notification and all that. The public could be heard at that committee meeting. And if the committee decided to refer it to the full legislature, there's another opportunity for public input at that time.
Rich, on the amendment.
I would support following our standard procedure. As a member of the Public Safety Committee, I cannot imagine us getting this RFP to review and not bringing it to the full legislature. I think we leave the language as it is, and it'll get here.
Jim, on the amendment.
Absolutely. And I agree. I think there are normal protocols that we would do, and we will certainly do that on this issue. I can't imagine the Public Safety Committee having a vote and not wanting the rest of the legislature to deal with it. You know, so I think the original resolution is fine.
Peter, on the amendment.
I was going to call a question.
The question's been called. Is there a second to calling the question? Seconded by Mike Sigler. Proceed to a vote on calling the question. Those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Two opposed. We will proceed to the question, which is the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The amendment fails. Now we're back on the Julie, are you done with your amendments?
Yes.
Okay, now we're back on the motion, or rather on the resolution with the friendly amendments that were added. My list has Anna, Jim, Mike, and Martha. Anna?
I remember what I was going to say.
Okay, well, you can pass.
Come on. I'll pass.
Jim?
I will pass.
Mike?
Pass.
Martha.
Well, I would just, since I didn't say this, I'll just add that on that last point about the RFP, I'm on the Public Safety Committee, I would also vote to have it, the RFP come to the full legislature. And I hope we get strong support for this project.
Carol.
So on that, the sixth, one, two, three, four, five, the sixth whereas, I'd not understanding this, it would seem to me that declaring now, in a whereas, that the implementation, absolutely, we know it allows for a more seamless distribution of services, and that it we already know it more accurately reflects the needs of city and county residents alike, it's now what we're about to study. So, and I hear the concern that it not be changed the way Dooley was suggesting, but if we replaced the word allow on a countywide level, could potentially allow for a more seamless distribution of police services unrestrained by municipal boundaries and more accurately reflect that is superfluous either way, but that would make more sense to me and not already declare that we've made a conclusion to something we're about to study.
Peter, so is that friendly?
I'll move that.
No.
So I'd like
to make a motion then.
So I'll move that.
Is there a second for the amendment from Carol? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on Carol's amendment. Ready to vote? So
if people aren't going to support it, could somebody explain to me what this means? If my interpretation is wrong, I'm open to hearing it. But if it, because it seems to me that if it isn't wrong, then I'm not sure that this says what you meant it to say.
I don't think
something else.
Do you want to speak? Who wants to speak to it? Will?
Yeah, I want to speak. I'm not sure I can answer Carol's question, but I think she just raised an interesting point, which is. The point of this whole study was to see whether it makes sense to consolidate different pieces. We don't know. And when this idea was presented last year in committee, I found it both intriguing and I found myself pretty dubious. I'm not sure that ultimately, certainly a full consolidation will necessarily be beneficial to all residents of the county. It might, and there may be pieces. So I think putting a qualifier in there just makes intellectual sense, and I hope we can consider this. I realize people are annoyed at the wordsmithing, but, you know, I think we're pretty close to where we want to be.
Jim?
John, have you read the sixth whereas? Use your microphone, please.
I was just wondering if you were referring to me. Yes, I did read it.
And
if any problems with could potentially.
Yeah, sure, comment.
I mean, it says allows for. You know, I see that as not saying it definitely will, but that's just my reading of it.
Yeah. Would could potentially allow create a problem for it?
I'm not saying one way or the other. I mean, that's how I read it. I don't read your suggestion much differently.
All right. Martha?
Call the question.
Question's been called on Carol's amendment, seconded by Jim. Ready to call. Those in favor calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We've got two opposed. All right. Well, on the amendment, the Carol is adding the word potentially. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That fails, did not get 8 votes. Back on the resolution. Jim?
I would like a roll call on this.
Well, are we ready to vote? Ambassador, roll call. Let's proceed to a roll call.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
8 ayes, 5 noes.
Passes. All right, let's move on. Peter, anything else from your committee?
No.
Let's move to Health and Human Services Committee. Leslie Bean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Health and Human Services Committee will meet this Thursday at 3:30 p.m. right here in this room. On our agenda, we will, the majority of our agenda, will probably spend time talking about, given the hot news item, unfortunately, here in Tompkins County around lead, elevated levels of lead in our school's water. We will spend some time with the health department talking about lead, pesticide, and all the chemicals and testing protocols and policies within our county, sort of soup to nuts. What do we do? A good review of that. We did something similar with homelessness at our last meeting. Patricia gave us a really good overview. And so we are doing similar with this item at our meeting on Thursday. That's my report.
Questions for Leslie? Okay. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. F and I met earlier this evening to discuss the Pine Tree Road project, and that was passed unanimously in committee. And the regularly scheduled meeting will be on Monday, March 7th in these chambers at 3:30.
Questions? Thank you, Dave. Transportation Committee will meet on the 9th, I believe, here in the chambers at 3 o'clock. We have one resolution. I'd be glad to answer any questions. We have one resolution. And this is H, calling on State of New York to restore funding parity between the capital plans of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority and the New York State Department of Transportation. Glenn, would you please move that for me?
Make a motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim. Discussion. Dooley?
Well, I know you'll all be thrilled to know that I have a version with a few changes in it, and I'd like to point them out. The fourth whereas, I have spelled out what FAST is the acronym for. Three whereas is down. I have changed the word agreement to approach because I don't believe there has ever been a parity agreement on paper. And I added the word reasonable. In the last whereas, I identify the comptroller as our state comptroller. And in the final resolve, I've changed the wording to be more like what we usually do, which is direct our staff to do something. So those are the changes. I hope the mover might find them friendly.
Glenn, are those friendly? Who seconded? Jim, are they friendly? Okay, then, so yeah. Those are adopted as friendly on to the motion. Ready to vote on the resolution with the friendly amendments. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed, that's unanimous. Thank you. Government Operations Committee. Who's our vice chair?
Will Burbank.
Will Burbank is vice chair. Will?
Oh, my goodness. Dan was leaving, and he said, Will, be prepared to give this report. And, of course, I was not. But we will be meeting at our next at an unusual time, which will be, help me, Kathy.
March 18th.
March 18th. Thank you.
Friday at
3 o'clock. Yes, right. And... we, among the unfinished business will be a discussion of the whole Biggs property, which was brought to our attention. And help me if there are any other members of the committee or Kathy in terms of agenda items. Dan was going to send some bullet points, and I'm not sure I actually got those.
We don't have any drone issues, do we?
I don't think we're doing drone, and I will express my apologies. And I will pass, and if there's anything else, I will come back.
Thank you, Will, for filling in.
Thank you.
Any questions that you'd like to ask Will about?
I'm trying to think something real hard.
Okay.
What happened at the committee?
Let's go back to Martha for her committee report, Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee.
Thank you, Mike. We met on February 17th, and we had several resolutions that we already took care of. We heard an update from Jonathan Comstock and Matt Johnston about Heat Smart Tompkins, which was very enlightening, about sort of a solarized Tompkins kind of initiative, but for building envelopes for efficiency for weatherization and renewable energy systems to heat, such as ground source and air source heat pumps. So that was great to hear about. TCAD came and talked about the Upstate Revitalization Initiative that we're hoping to get some projects funded through, and also talked about the updates on the CTAP program at the IDA. So basically the first revision adopted by the IDA based on local labor, but other issues the city is still discussing, so those will come back to the IDA at some later point. We had a long discussion of the planning department's work program, because it's a long work program. I mean, they have a lot of stuff on their table, on their plates this year, and it's all really important. So those are the highlights. We next meet on March 11th. We're going to have a special meeting Friday, March 11th. Heads up, everybody, special meeting Friday, March 11th, 10 o'clock in this room, to talk about gravity renewables, about a water treatment, a hydropower project that we are going to be able to bring to the county for our electricity supply. And so that's what we're talking about, that Friday, March 11th at 10 o'clock right here. Our regular meeting will be March 16th, the following Wednesday at 3. So unless there are any questions, that's it.
Martha, Jim.
Not a question, a comment. I know you mentioned it, but the local labor requirement was approved by the IDA for the CTAP applications, not outside the boundaries of the city of Ithaca.
Anything else for Martha? I understand Will has had a revelation on government operations.
Thank you. I finally found my note from Dan. In addition to the Biggs property discussion, we will be making an appointment to TCOG. There will be consideration of a possible stipend for our poet laureate. There will be a discussion of local law for attendance requirements for advisory boards, and a committee list of responsibilities. And we are, in fact, meeting on Friday on the 18th at 3:30.
Thank you, Will.
I had 3:30, but it'll be posted.
I think it's at 3.
Jim Dennis.
Yes, I neglected to say something about Ban the Box when Budget Committee report was taking place. We had a discussion about that. We had Amy, Steve Estes there. And we have asked them, and they agreed and to talk to our customers of civil service and let them know, our customers being other municipalities, and let them know what we are considering in our Ban the Box proposal, so that they can be aware and deal with what we are thinking about doing if the legislature approves this within the next 60 days. So they are doing that now, or they will be doing that, and then as they warn everyone, so to speak, it will come back to us and we will vote on it.
Okay. Thank you. Minutes. February 16th. Someone want to move them? Martha? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Woohoo! Really?
Is there any unfinished business?
Mike?
I forgot. And then we go into executive session.
Oh, no.
Did we approve Bruce Estes?
Yes, it was my appointment. Probably you didn't need to have that in your folder. I asked Michelle to do it.
Okay.
All right. Then we will. I need a motion to go into executive discussion, executive session to discuss real property negotiations. Is there someone want to move that? Moved by Dave, seconded by Carol. All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We will come out of executive session, and we will probably not take any action.
Okay.
Is that correct, Jonathan?
Thank you.
All right. So let's just take a minute while we shut down.